Is that how you say it? Grzanich?
Grzanich, yeah.
I know. Yeah. I got tongue-tied. I'm sorry.
No, no problem.
It's a beautiful name. It's a beautiful name, I think.
It flows sometimes.
Does. Missing some vowels, but otherwise nice.
Who needs vowels?
No one.
Overrated. Yeah. It's got a lot of consonants in a row, Steve. You know that. You're aware of that.
Hey, you is fine. I answer by...
Although we did find out, I'm sure this has been revealed on the Steve Cochran Show before, but the first time Dave Edit introduced Andrea Darlis, he called her Angela.
Yes.
That's bad.
He was close. He was in the neighborhood. For those of you tuning in and thinking this isn't Steve Cochran's show, you're right. You nailed it. It's not. Steve is gone early for a golf event. Dave Bennett as well. Angela Darlis also among the missing.
That's what Mr. T calls her, you know.
Angela?
Yeah, he lives in her building and he calls her Angela.
But at some point, you got to correct him. I mean, if it's an ongoing relationship.
You can't correct Mr. T. He's right, infallible. Like the Pope, Mr. T is infallible.
Yeah. I would correct the Pope if he said Schneider.
Would you?
Yeah, I'd Snyder.
He'd send you straight to hell.
Bless me, but I need to tell you something, Popester.
I've told you before you were here at WGN and I was filling in on one of the shows one day. It was the first time I had Tom Skilling on with me, and he called me Steve over and over and over again. And then I questioned my own name. I'm like, boy, Tom Skilling is so good at what he does. Maybe my name is Steve and I've been saying it wrong.
You know what he called me the other day?
What?
Cindy.
Oh, he did, didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Well,
it's hard to keep all the names straight, I'll tell you.
There's too many names.
You know, back when I used to do broadcast for the University of Illinois sports teams, I did the halftime show. The main play-by-play person would always just call me Jimmy.
Really?
Why?
Yeah. Neil... I'm not going to say his name.
Because
but
why?
His first name's Neil.
Any certain reason?
I just think he couldn't remember how to pronounce my name.
Well, there was a time where if you just walked down your hall at work and didn't know somebody's name and called them Jim or Jimmy, you'd be right a lot of the time. You know?
You're right.
It's changed.
And now it's Steve.
Yeah, here at GN.
It's Steve or Kevin.
Everybody is Steve.
And
yeah.
Women are Mary.
You know, there's only two Marys.
And maybe he
right?
thought I was like the Jimmy Olsen character.
Oh, yeah, you're
similar
to Jimmy Olsen,
yeah,
Steve.
Maybe, I don't know.
I could see that.
Jimmy.
I could definitely see that.
I hate when you've been in the neighborhood a while, but you don't see people on a regular basis, and then there's a big neighborhood party that I had this weekend, and you forget people's names.
Sure.
You cannot say, what's your name again?
Not after you've if you've known somebody for X amount of time.
Yeah.
It really looks bad.
18
if you
years.
I've lived next door to you for 18
Not
years.
Not next door, but this is like in the general vicinity. So then you're just, hey, what is shaking, woman?
Right.
You know. Got to find somebody that knows them and say, what's
right.
your name again? Tell
right.
me. Hurry.
Do you know what I've done in the past is if I see someone, you know how like your kids have friends and in Little League and soccer and you see those parents for a long time?
Sure.
I have their names in my phone, so I'll just look up the last name and
that's a good move.
Isn't
you gotta
it?
Keep that book with you at all times.
Well, it's in my phone. It's
that's
a
perfect.
Book.
And that's even better.
Wouldn't this be a great app that you could take a picture of somebody and it tells you immediately
right.
what their name is?
That's a billion dollar idea.
Yeah. That
an app called whosthatguy.com. Where you just go, here's the guy. Who is that guy?
Take it 1871. It's all yours.
Now, you already know this. There's something women say when they don't know a woman's name, another woman's name, and there's something guys say when they don't know somebody's name. A woman who doesn't know your name, if you're encountering her at any kind of a function, she'll go, hey, you, and that means she does not know your name, ever. Because nobody would ever say,
right.
hey, you, if you knew the person's name.
I go, hey, woman. That's what I say.
That's your version of it.
Or, hey, sweetie.
Right, all right.
Or, hey, girl.
But then, do you know what the guy's version of that is?
Dude.
Yep. There he is. Anytime a guy says there he is, that's 100% guarantee he has no idea what your name is.
And then do you give the bro hug where you're supposed to. How many times is it for the bro hug? One, two, three?
Three and out. Yeah.
All right.
There he is. Hey, you. No, you guys don't know my name.
No lingering on the breasts either.
Right. There's trouble with that.
What about bro?
I'm
hey,
so
bro
against
ham.
That.
Come on. I want to hear you say
I'm
that to
so
somebody.
I'm so against that.
I would giggle like a little schoolgirl if you said, hey, bro ham.
That means not only do I not know your name, but I've given up on my own life that I just don't care anymore.
And it all kind of ties back nicely with Muhammad Ali. Remember, what's my name?
Yes.
Say my name.
Yes.
You notice everybody, a lot of people on this radio station this morning, not hosts included, but guests,
mm-hmm.
were saying Mohammed.
And over the years, I've heard a lot of people say Muhammad Ali with the real stress on the Mo part. Yeah, that's the way I've always said it too. But
Muhammad.
Yeah, I know, but I don't know what it is, but so many people have gone with the Mo instead of the Ma. There he is.
It may be dialect, too, maybe, because, you know, I have family members who say Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday.
Oh, they do?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Hillbillies.
Yeah.
Well, I even all over social media, it was driving my older son, Michael, nuts, because he said, you know, they're spelling it like he's the Prophet Muhammad, and he's not. It's M-U, not M-O.
Right.
And I said, Michael, people on social media are stupid. So all get off of it.
Oh, yeah, smart. All right, let's do this. We'll take a quick break. We have a big show, an extra hour of us, Bill and Wendy. We're glad that you're here. If you want to join in, 312-981-7200. Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder filling in for Steve Cochran and his show as they go off to do a golf event today. They'll be back with their normal times tomorrow.
Special thanks to our producer, Kevin Richter, who sent us both texts this morning. Don't forget, early show.
Right.
I also had it on my calendar, so it would go off, because you know me, I have anticipatory anxiety.
I know you do.
And I got here on time.
Yeah, there wasn't any problem with that. On our show on Friday, we were talking about your anticipatory anxiety toward the pet parade. You were the Grand Marshal. One of the Grand Marshals. That doesn't water it down. You always say it like... Could have just been me, but there were others, too.
I was an honorary Grand Marshal.
Oh, well, then that's
HGM.
Not much of an honor, really.
I know. Steve Dale was there, too. He was an honorary.
There were pets. I knew Steve Dale would be by.
I wanted so badly to bring Tiki. I really did. I was in this Jeep, and I wanted Tiki to be sitting next to me, but he is a spazitron, and I couldn't have had him.
Mm-hmm.
He sounds like a chimp when he sees other dogs. It's like...
Don't you think, though, that at a pet parade, everybody would have been very forgiving toward your dog's behavior? Don't you think?
I don't know. I can't bring my kid's dog or husband anywhere. They embarrass me.
Kevin, could you just keep a copy of that handy?
No, don't.
Just keep a copy of that.
I love him, but seriously.
We may need that later for court depositions.
The dog, really, it's embarrassing. Jim, my husband, will not take him for a walk before 10 o'clock. I said, you know, he's got to go earlier. He goes, I don't care. He embarrasses me.
No.
Anytime there's other dogs out there, he sits there and makes this chimpy noise.
What do you think?
Go see him and hang out with him.
I don't speak dog, but what's
either.
In it for a dog to make a monkey sounding noise? What would be the advantage for a dog to sound like a chimpanzee?
He's just whining. He wants to go across the street and see the dog, and sometimes we let him, but it's just embarrassing.
Yeah, yeah.
If I had a chimpanzee, I wouldn't really care. But it's a dog.
If I had a dog and a chimpanzee, I would dress the chimp like a jockey and have him ride the dog everywhere I went.
That sounds premeditated.
That would be fun to do.
You would do that
in
a heartbeat?
Yes, I would.
And someday, when I'm a millionaire, I'm going to buy you a monkey and a dog.
Please do, because I will show you that will be my thing. People will go, is Bill Leff coming by? Yeah, why? Is he the guy that always brings the monkey that's dressed, or chimpanzee that's dressed like a jockey riding a dog? Yeah, well, that'll be fun. I just think that'd be a good time for everybody.
Except for the dog.
Yeah, the dog probably wouldn't enjoy it as much, but I think, you know.
The chimp would have fun.
Yeah, the chimp would have a good time. What were your duties, by the way? What did you have to do?
Wave.
Just wave? That was it?
And can I tell you, I know you're ambidextrous, and I thought of you this weekend because, you know, my right hand waves really well, and my left hand, I have to think about it.
Yeah.
My left hand is not...
Is that as automatic?
No.
Yeah,
it was a thought process that was, you know, and I didn't want to miss one side of the street.
You have to almost do a couple of minutes left-handed, then a couple minutes right-handed. You have to alternate.
Yes.
Right?
But my left hand doesn't work as well. And then somebody gave me the rock and roll devil horn thing.
Yeah.
And I have trouble with my left hand doing it.
But it's so simple. Why wouldn't it just automatically?
Because you're ambidextrous.
I don't mean to rub it in, but yes, I am.
I think those of us
who consider us not ambidextrous can also wave with our left hand.
Yeah, but it's not.
You will notice it's not as fluid. Like, you know, hi, everybody, I'm waving with my right hand.
Yeah.
Hi, Kevin. Kevin's waving back. And then you go to move your left hand, it just feels different.
It's a little more herky-jerky.
A little bit, see?
But close enough to where people would recognize what you were doing.
Oh, well, yeah, it wasn't like, you know, but
what's
I could have just done the queen's wave.
Why is she flailing at me? I don't understand.
She needs help.
What is she flicking?
911. And why is there a chimpanzee riding a dog?
You know, listen, I might even love, I don't know if I love dogs more than Steve Dale, noted pet expert Steve Dale.
More than he loves them, or you love dogs more than you love Steve Dale? What do you mean?
Oh, I totally love dogs more than I love Steve Dale. Dale, but I think he has me beat in the doggy love.
Yeah.
But I'm telling you, there's this guy, and Kevin, you saw him. He walks out in front of the Showcase studio, the Allstate Showcase studio, and he's all dressed in Cubs garb, and then his little dog has a Cubs uniform on. And I'm sorry.
But?
I want to kidnap the dog.
And do what?
Save it. Put a Sox jersey on
Why?
It. No, kidding.
Maybe that dog loves the
no,
Cubs.
No, it doesn't.
You don't know?
It doesn't need to wear an outfit like that.
Do you think it's disturbing the dog?
Yes.
That the dog's going, I'm really a White Sox fan. This is awful. This is awful torture.
All kidding aside, I don't think he's a White Sox fan because dogs don't go to baseball games.
See, no one goes to White Sox games.
Sarah puts a bow tie on Chicken, and he's not a gentleman, so it doesn't make sense.
Chicken is Kevin and Sarah's cat.
Yeah.
Why does
you
she
have
do
a
that?
Cat named Chicken?
Yeah.
Oh my. Oh. Nice.
You know what's
Ask
weird?
Kevin,
I had fried cat last night.
Oh, don't.
Sorry.
Don't.
No, it was chicken. I just call my chicken cat. But I feel sorry for this dog. It's got a little hat in between its ears.
Right. Now, is this the one that people come running over? I've
yes.
seen. Yeah, because people love to see that. They think that's adorable that the dog is dressed like Ronnie Woo Woo.
That is what it is, and I want to talk to the guy because I want to know if he's married, because if not, that's his chick magnet.
Oh, yeah. You can't do poorly with that going on.
Really?
Women will come from miles around to see that.
To see the dog?
To see the dog, but then, you know, the owner's going to do fine.
Don't
He'll
think
do all
so.
Right. Think.
I mean, I'm just trying to help people. That's all I'm saying.
Right, I get it. I get it. So will you be the Grand Marshal again next year, or was this it? Is this the end of the line for you?
I don't know, but my son
Honorary
Michael...
Honorary Grand Marshal, sorry.
This is the slam I get, just so you know. My son Michael's at WLTL, which is the high school radio station. So mm-hmm. he was on a float or a flatbed truck rocking the tunes. So he was in the parade. And Michael must have said, oh, yeah, my mom's one of the Grand Marshals. And somebody from WLTL, who shall remain nameless, says, is that all this town has to offer?
Oh. You were struck down by WLTL.
I know.
How does that feel?
I'm not going to go speak at their little summer program now.
No, you still will. I know you.
You're right.
You'll do it grudgingly, but you'll still do it. All right. There's a lot coming up on today's show, including Jim O'Hare. Now, Jim is a Chicago actor that made very, very good for himself. He was on Parks and Recreation for the entire run of the show.
I hear he's a great guy, too.
He is. You know what? He is a great guy. You'll see. Mary Schmeek will be with us, Tribune columnist. She's filling in for Eric Zorn. And then
love her.
Oh, she's great, too. All right, so all that and a whole lot more. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN. Did you say Riverdale, Steve?
Riverdale. Hmm. Yeah, it's a little...
Oh, Archie.
I think it's a different Archie.
Oh.
Pretty sure it's a different Archie. Hi, guys. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy. We're filling in for Steve. He's out at a golf outing.
And 312-981-7200 is the number to call us or text us. And, Bill, we have an unusual text that came over.
What is it?
Just moments ago from 630. Mm-hmm. Is this a live show or a recording? Sounds familiar.
This, I think, is a recording, isn't it? I'm pretty sure this is a recording.
What's today's date? March
2011? Yeah. So... I think it is a recording.
What's the problem?
I don't know. Here's a strange story that'll happen in the future in 2016.
On 6616?
Yeah. A man in Colorado is in serious trouble because... Now, I want to preface this before I tell you why this man in Colorado is in serious trouble. Last week on the show, we had a segment about a mom who may or may not have been doing a great mom job as her child climbed into an
enclosure. Why can't you remember that word?
I keep wanting to say embankment.
Police are expected to make a comment or prosecutors today about charges, by the way.
About the same story?
Yeah.
Towards her?
Well, whether or not they would do it.
Oh.
In Cincinnati, this kid climbed in to an area he was not supposed
embankment.
To be. Embankment.
Yeah, I can't. Well, he fell down an embankment.
Yeah, he did.
Into the enclosure.
Yeah, yeah. And it got dangerous. And there's
shot and killed the gorilla.
Right. We're one less gorilla because of this. All right. So now here's a story about a dad who I'm telling you that this guy's way, way worse. He challenged his daughter to a duel with guns.
Real guns or
yeah.
like?
No, real guns.
Nerf guns.
No, real gun. A Colorado man is facing child abuse charges after allegedly challenging his daughter to a firearm duel. The bizarre challenge led to a shootout on Wednesday before Robert Williams was safely taken into custody. This according to the El Paso County Sheriff's Office.
Let's hear what prompted this.
Oh, come on. You've never challenged either of your kids to a gun duel?
Just lightsabers.
Authorities say that Williams, Robert Williams, was arguing with his daughter around 7:30 p.m.
Do we know how old she is? I'm sorry. I can wait.
I thought it doesn't say in the story. I know she's a teenager, but okay. It doesn't say exactly.
That's all I needed to know.
Yeah, it doesn't say her exact age.
All right, sorry.
Authorities say that Williams was arguing with his daughter around 7:30 when he pulled out a handgun on her and his wife. He allegedly then ordered his daughter to go to another room and fetch another gun so that they could have a duel.
Go fetch the gun.
Go fetch our other gun, our dueling gun. Where do we keep our dueling guns?
In the holster, Dad.
A struggle ensued, and a round was fired by the father. First of all, you always let the kid fire first. Always ladies first and kids fire
first. Yeah, what's he thinking?
He's breaking the laws of duels. this, again, according to the El Paso County Sheriff's Office, who grimaced whenever they commented on the story. The daughter then fired a round in the direction of the father. So actually, they're keeping within the laws of a duel so far.
Yeah, but no one was hit. They're bad aims.
They're bad duelists. As the wife and daughter tried to flee the home. Oh, no. Once you start a duel, you finish the duel. Come on. Come on.
Only one person leaves the room.
Right. It's like Thunderdome. Two men enter, one man leaves. Williams allegedly grabbed a shotgun from a shed and pointed that gun at his wife. She was able to get it away from him and then call 911. Fortunately for everybody, no one was injured in the duel.
Isn't the shotgun always kept in the shed? Doesn't that sound like the perfect place? I'm going to the shed to get the shotgun to kill old Yeller.
We have snow shovels in our shed. So if anyone in my family ever challenged me to a snow shovel duel, that's where we would have to go to.
Dig this.
Williams was booked on 2 counts of felony menacing. He was prohibited from using a weapon, and his daughter's age is not being released.
Okay, so
but I read in another account that it was a teenager, but it doesn't say exactly how old she is.
But under 18, they don't have to reveal that information.
Right. For the embarrassment of the family. We don't want to embarrass the family.
Dude, this is when you don't want a name to be released.
Right. Have you ever been in a situation where you thought to yourself, I'm fighting with a family member, and the best way to solve this is to challenge them and then have a duel with them? It's like the 1800s. You see what this play Hamilton is doing to people? Everybody wants to be in a duel now. Come on, Broadway. Don't mess with us.
That is so funny. I want to go see that. I have to get tickets for that.
You can't.
I know.
It's already sold out. I already knew this, but I was listening to Dean Richards yesterday talking about Hamilton, and he can't get tickets, and he's Dean Richards. He's Mr. Theater, and he can't get tickets to see Hamilton when it comes here.
I know. This is crazy.
It's impossible. My wife and daughters are going to New York in a couple months, and they said, is there anybody you can call? And no. It's easier to get Bozo tickets than it is Hamilton tickets.
It's coming here in September.
But Steve, try getting tickets. It's impossible.
I thought it was coming here next month.
No, I think
it was going to be here forever, though.
Yeah, it'll run for a long time. But I don't know if that'll make it any easier.
I really want to go see it. I am such a follower, not a leader. Can I tell you that?
Sure.
Because when it came out before, Kevin said, you interested in talking about Hamilton? And I think both of us just kind of, this was a while ago.
Right.
Hamilton, who's going to...
Well, it's the weirdest thing because when you look at what the show is, and I haven't seen it, so I can't say anything good or bad about it. I have no idea what happens.
Everyone loves it that I've heard.
The reviews are sparkling, but it's a show about Alexander Hamilton. So right off the bat, you go, must see it.
Was he did he have enough going on to have a play after that?
Absolutely. He was the founder of our national bank.
Right.
I guess, but still.
Well, that's exciting.
That is exciting.
No, it isn't. And I know that's what Mary was saying.
This is what ticks me off. You're going to see it before me, and you think it's a boring, stupid idea.
I don't. That's why I want to see it. I want them to win me over because I would have never suspected that.
A musical about the man who started the banking system. Would be a big
hit.
Come
on, listen to yourself.
That's what I'm saying. On paper, like, you go, all right, here's what the show is. Who wants to see it? Show of hands. You go, yeah, I'm going to pass on that. But because it's the hottest ticket on Broadway, everybody wants to see it. And the reviews are really, really good.
And isn't it all hip-hop?
I don't know if it all is, but is it mostly or all?
It is.
Yeah. And they're applauded for the fact that they have they didn't cast. How can I say this right? They didn't cast accurately because it's a multi-ethnic cast playing what was traditionally just white guys. So they're being applauded for that, and good for them for that.
I have the story, according to Broadway.com. Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Who's leaving, by the way.
Yes, and somebody else has taken his place, which I have that in. Javier Munoz will play the role of Alexander Hamilton at select weekend performances.
Now, in Chicago, they got Jerry Taft to do it. And that's going to be fun.
No wonder it's sold out.
People love Jerry Taft. He can sing. He can dance.
Looks good in the wig.
Looks great in the wig.
Mm-hmm. Lin-Manuel Miranda takes the stage as the unlikely founding father determined to make his mark on the new nation, as hungry and ambitious as he is. From bastard orphan
Wendy
to Washington's right-hand man, rebel to war hero, a loving husband caught in the country's first sex scandal.
Oh.
Well, now I'm in. To the treasury head. Who made it?
That was the sex scandal.
Yeah, so much for finding the bank. Who cares?
Hey, don't tell us how it ends.
To the treasury head who made an untrusting world believe in the American economy, George Washington, Eliza Hamilton, Thomas Jefferson, and Hamilton's lifelong friend and foil, Aaron Burr. Was that the guy from Ironside?
Raymond
Burr. He was the guy he dueled with.
Right.
All make their mark in this astonishing new musical exploration of political mastermind.
Now do you want to see it?
Totally.
Now you want to see it. Now the musical that I've been writing about George Hamilton, also called Hamilton. Now
it's called Tan Man?
No, we were going with Hamilton, but now we're getting sued. And my Margaret Hamilton musical is also screwed up.
I don't know who Margaret Hamilton is.
The Wicked Witch of the West.
That I would totally see.
Yeah, I'm working on that, but now I have to change the names. Stupid Hamilton. All right, we have to take a quick break, and then more show coming your way next. Bill and Wendy, WGN. It's Bill F. and it's Wendy Snyder.
Will you explain why we're here at this early time?
Yes.
People are confused.
I know we're getting a lot of texts from people who are a little bit confused. Steve Cochran and many members of his show, not everybody, not Mary. Mary stayed with the ship.
No.
She's still on board.
Gotta take up golf. I gotta start doing it.
you get
out of work early.
When are Bill and Wendy going to take us golfing, Mary?
We don't golf.
It won't be us. We could take them miniature golf.
Yeah. Yeah,
that'd be fun. All right, we'll do that.
We'll have Steve come in an hour early, and we'll
All right, make up for today.
So he left
stay
early
late.
To golf.
There's a golf event that he and
just
Andrea
today, right?
And Dave. Yeah, everything will be back normal tomorrow.
What would happen if we told our bosses? We got to leave an hour early because we're doing a miniature golf tournament.
Yeah.
Would they let us? Why is miniature golf laughed upon?
Steve set a precedent, I think, that if there's some sort of a golf event, you can get an excused absence. So, yeah, I think if we all wanted to go miniature golfing, I think they'd have to, yeah.
Go to the Gulf of Mexico?
Want to go there?
We just have to raise money in some way.
Right.
At the event.
Right.
So we can do that.
That's easy.
And then they'll let us go for
all
sure.
All right.
Why don't we do that? Why don't we, you know, all these celebrities have these golf outings. Why don't we have a celebrity mini golf outing?
Should totally do that.
I'm in. You don't have to convince
Jackie
me.
Can I go to yours instead?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah.
It'd be perfect.
Again, Jackie Paulus, if you're listening, because I hope she's still working on me playing Yahtzee with Duncan Keith from the Blackhawks.
She's working on that.
And
I'm sorry, in her office.
Kevin was going to do Magic the Gathering with Nicholas Jalmerson.
Yeah.
Let's just limit it to the good ideas.
Right, so mine.
Come on, a miniature golf celebrity tournament. We're hosting it.
I would love to do that. I have golfed and I have miniature golfed, and miniature golf is so much more fun than regular golf. It's not even close.
I agree. I golfed once and it was kind of fun. I want to take lessons.
Yeah.
But I don't have time.
Here's what I noticed. Now, I play tennis almost every day. When you golf for 2 seconds, and then there's 5 minutes in between, and then you golf again for 2 seconds, and then there's 5 minutes in between, and that's how golfing goes. The only time you're playing is when you're swinging your golf club, and that takes 2 seconds. When you're playing tennis, you're playing nonstop
tennis.
Well,
it's a different game.
Well, you're thinking, Bill, you're looking at the lay of the land, the conditions, you're breathing in the heavily fertilized air, and you're plotting your next shot when you golf.
I mean, it's way different.
That said, there's a lot of downtime.
And you get to drive around in the golf cart.
Yeah.
I've never been in a golf cart. Well, not for golfing.
Right.
They are so much fun to drive.
That part is fun.
Yeah.
If there wasn't the golfing element of golfing, if it was just called driving around in a golf cart, I would golf every day.
Why don't you be a caddy then?
Oh, that'd be great. I would do that. Except I think if you're a caddy, sometimes the real golfer asks your advice, and my advice would be, well, quit golfing. There's a thousand things in the world to do.
I don't know. I'd use a 220, 221.
Right. That kind of advice.
He would be a caddy for exactly one day. They would go, you are fired.
I would be caddy. I'd go, look at the way that guy's dressed. What's with that guy? I'd be the caddy.
There's your musical.
Right. Sorry, Hamilton. I have my own ideas.
Caddy.
Yeah. I'd go, those pants with that shirt, seriously? All right. Good luck.
I would see that.
Yeah.
But we need to get that organized. Has there ever been? I'm sure there's been a celebrity mini golf tournament, but what a great idea I came up with.
You know, my bachelor party was at a miniature golf place. Did you know that?
No. How
cute is that? It was at Park King, the late great Park King, with the giant castle. The one that when I was a kid, I think I've told you this, maybe I haven't. When I was a kid, Park King was in, I think, Des Plaines, I think. Did you ever see it, Steve? Park King? It had the giant castle.
A lot of bachelor parties at the
It looked like, no, I think I was the only bachelor
maybe,
party in the history
could
of Park
be,
King.
Yeah.
So when I was a kid, whenever we would pass by Park King, we'd say to my dad, can we go there? Because it looked like Disneyland. They had this giant castle. And my dad would go, we'll go on our way back. And then he would take a different route home.
See, that is
That's
genius.
That's cruel. That's just cruel.
Lincolnshire and Milwaukee Avenue?
No, that's where that's the current one.
That's in my hood, yeah.
Oh, that's an...
That one's still up in existence.
We could do it up there.
They have a castle.
Yeah, see what
like
I mean?
It looks like Disney.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
it looks whimsical.
Got to go with one of the clowns in the big mouth that shoots out the ball.
Those are fun.
The hippopotamus hole.
Those are fun.
Haunted Trails I go to a lot. That's in Bridgeview, I guess, 89th and Harlem.
Yeah.
I like mini golfing there. I want to go this weekend. Isn't
Wouldn't
that fun?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is.
It really
That's the one, Haunted Trails, that used to have, like, way back in the 60s and 70s, they had cages. Like, you'd get in a cage, and then it would just revolve. It would go up and down. Like, you'd drive past, and you just saw people in cages going up and down.
Like a zipper, but you were in cages. I know what you're talking about.
Each of the cage contraptions had two, so it would dock, and two people would get in each side of the cage, and then it would just revolve you in a cage.
To make you throw up?
I don't know what the purpose was. We never did it. We would see, that's the one my dad wanted to take us to. We'd go, no, we want to go to the Fairyland Castle. And he'd go, no, you revolve in a cage.
And play some skee ball, which you can still do at Haunted Trails, which is pretty fun. We've got to get that together. We're going to do a celebrity... Putt-putt golf, is that what they
That'd
call it now?
Fun.
Or miniature golf? That's what I've always called it.
I think either one is usable.
Fun golf.
Fun golf, yeah. All right.
That's what we should change it to.
We have to take a break. Steve has the news, and then we have a lot more show. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN. Steve, thanks very much. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. If you want to join in, 312-981-7200 is your best bet. You can call us or text us there. The CDC has announced the list of America's drunkest cities, and there's a definite pattern. See if you can figure out the pattern.
All right.
These are the drunkest cities. Now, they list the top 20 drunkest cities in America. I'll just quickly go through the first three. Number 20 is Corvallis, Oregon. Iowa City, Iowa is 19th. Lincoln, Nebraska is 18th.
Are there college universities? Because isn't Iowa in Iowa City? Because that would be my guess.
Yeah.
I know Iowa City's in Iowa.
Yes, it is. Yep. They moved it. They had to move it.
Is there a college campus like University of Iowa? Is that in Iowa City?
Because there is a school there. Yeah.
That would be my only reason to guess that Iowa would be on the list. I don't see them as heavy drinkers.
I've been there a couple times. I don't remember them drinking any more or less than any other place I've ever been. But
there's so many fun things to do there, though.
In Iowa?
Why would you?
Yeah. All right. Now, here's where it starts to get patterny. If you can detect the pattern. Number 17, the 17th drunkest city in America, is the Milwaukee, Waukesha, West Allis area. Not just Milwaukee, but the surrounding area of Waukesha and West Allis. In those communities... the percentage of adults drinking to excess is 23.3%, which
that's
is roughly
nothing.
1 in 4. You don't think so? I think that's a lot.
So West Allis is the fairgrounds?
Yes.
And the NASCAR, is it a NASCAR track? Or?
Do they have a NASCAR track?
I don't know.
They have a big, they do a lot of races up there. I don't know if it's, I think it's NASCAR.
Marquette's in Milwaukee, right?
It's not in West Allis.
No, it's not.
Bang
it
zoom.
Says home to several of America's oldest and largest breweries, Beer is a major part of Milwaukee's culture. It is perhaps no surprise that heavy drinking is relatively common in the metro area. In Milwaukee, 23.3% of adults either binge drink or drink heavily, a considerably larger share than the 18% of American adults nationwide.
That's not that much more. It's heavily?
It's not that much more. I don't know how they define heavily. It doesn't say exactly what their criteria for heavily is. But they are number 17, Milwaukee, Waukesha, West Allis. Number 16 is Janesville, Beloit, Wisconsin.
Okay, I know where you're going. Is the rest of the list Wisconsin?
Almost entirely.
Is it really?
Almost entirely. Yeah. It doesn't make sense that out of the 50 states, and I haven't tallied exactly how many of the top 20, but it's nearly half, and that's a lot.
Well, all the breweries are there. Schlemiel Schlemazel.
I don't even think you can pin it on the breweries. Like, if there was a candy factory next door to me, I would eat candy, but I wouldn't eat candy all day, every day.
If you had a Dylan's candy bar right next door to you.
There is one next door to us.
I mean, in your house.
Another example, yeah. Well, I lived in Wisconsin. I was processed cheese for a few years.
Yeah.
And it's just very much a part of the culture.
They have the real cheese there. They don't need the processed
stuff.
No,
but I wasn't really a Wisconsinite,
right.
So I was processed cheese.
Right.
It's just part of their culture.
Only 15 U.S. metro areas have a higher excessive drinking rate than the Janesville-Beloit metro area. Alcohol use often comes with more risky behaviors, like driving while intoxicated. In Janesville, 40% of fatal car accidents are alcohol-related. That's a high number.
That's a shame.
A far higher share than the 31% nationwide proportion. I got to be honest, that's an alarmingly high number, too, but 40% is off the charts high. Number 15 is Racine, Wisconsin. You're going to hear the word Wisconsin a lot in this story. A growing body of evidence suggests higher alcohol consumption can lead to higher risk of obesity. In Racine, 23.5% of adults report excessive drinking, and 31.8% are obese. Nearly one-third of the people in Racine, Wisconsin are obese. Now, obese is far greater than overweight.
Absolutely.
Each a higher share than the respective 18% of excessive drinking nationwide and 27% national for obesity. 14 is Grand Forks, North Dakota. 13 is Missoula, Montana. Don't worry, Wisconsin folks. We have something for you. Number 12, Sheboygan, Wisconsin.
Well, that's when you can get a brat and a beer. That is good, good, good.
The official foods of Sheboygan. In Wisconsin, 24.2% of adults drink excessively, the highest share of any state in the nation. The percentage of adults who drink excessively in Sheboygan is 24%. While slightly lower than the state rate, it's still among the highest of all U.S. metro areas. Sheboygan is one of 12 cities in Wisconsin where the excessive drinking rate exceeds the 18% national rate by at least 5 percentage points. Number 11 is Wausau, Wisconsin. Excessive alcohol consumption can have any number of negative health impacts, despite having one of the highest excessive drinking rates of any U.S. city. However, Wausau residents tend to be healthier than most Americans. Well, there's good news.
Well, they exercise and then they drink.
Right.
That's the best way to do
it.
Or
they walk to the liquor store. They jog to the liquor store and then they jog home because they've got liquor.
Yeah, because they don't have money for gas.
Right, right. Only 11.8% of metro area adults report being in poor or fair health. Less than 14% of Americans reporting less than optimal health nationwide. Then you go to Minnesota. Mankato, North Mankato, Minnesota is in number 10th spot. Wisconsin, not to be cheated, though, back in number 9 with Eau Claire, Wisconsin. It's amazing to me that this is over and over and over again Wisconsin cities, but it is. Eau Claire residents report some of the heaviest drinking in the country. As is the case in a number of other metro areas with high rates of excessive drinking, the Eau Claire area is home to quite a few drinking establishments. Can you blame it on that, though? Because unless the city is just out and out dry, you're going to find a bunch of drinking establishments.
Well, you could drink at home, too, which is usually what I do.
Yeah.
You know, I'll have a beer at home.
Yeah.
But if there are fun little, taverns...
But I can't figure out if there's a correlation in the amount of taverns and drinking establishments, because you're going to find that I know there's a lot in Wisconsin. When my wife and I started dating, her family had a cabin in the North Woods, and we would drive around in the North Woods, and you'd see people every once in a while because it's the woods, but you'd see bars and taverns everywhere.
Really?
Like, I'd say, there's more bars and taverns than there are people in this city. And everyone would laugh, and they'd go, if you're wrong, you're not off by much.
That's dangerous. I mean, you're in the middle of nowhere at a tavern?
I know. They were everywhere. Like some blocks would have a tavern on each corner and sometimes one in the middle. And you go, wow, that's, for a block that only has five buildings, establishments, three out of the five, that's a high ratio.
Every town has more taverns than churches.
I know, that's true.
It is true.
That's true.
All right,
you've got to have somewhere to go after church.
I guess.
What constitutes heavy drinking, because I'm curious about this, according to a government website, Rethink Drinking, men more than four drinks on any day or 14 per week.
Is considered excessive?
Is considered heavy drinking. Women more than three drinks on any day or seven per week. I'm totally a heavy drinker then.
Based on that.
More than three drinks on any day. There are some days I've had more than three beers or seven per week.
But are they saying with how much regularity would you have to go above those totals for you to qualify?
This is it. For healthy adults in general, drinking more than these single day or weekly limits is considered at risk or heavy drinking. So if you have more than four drinks on any given day of the week,
yeah,
or 14 drinks per week.
That's for men. Do you agree with those numbers or disagree?
I think it's low.
You think that's too low?
Women, more than three drinks on any day or seven per week.
Yeah.
I almost weekly have more than seven drinks per week. Not so much anymore. I used to have seven per night.
Oh, wow.
I'm kidding. But, you know, if you have like a glass of wine every day after work, that's five glasses. And then if you have a couple beers on the weekend, there's seven right there. To me, that is not heavy drinking. Am I wrong in assuming this?
Wait, so for a woman, they're saying, how many do you get in a week?
Seven. Men get 14.
So, yeah.
That seems very low.
I would quibble with one. If you're averaging one a day.
If you're averaging like 3 to 5 a day, yeah, I think you have a problem.
Then it's excessive. Then it's too
maybe
much.
Maybe over five a day you have a problem.
But five is fine. Five is right on the cusp. You're okay with five.
But seriously, seven drinks per week?
Yeah.
If you have a glass of wine every day, which they say, you know, glass of red wine is good for you, then they change that and say a glass of beer is good for you.
Right.
Prevents this, prevents that.
Yeah.
That's not too much to me.
I can see where, like, if you were doing, you said it's four a day for a guy. If you're doing four drinks a day every day.
But it's not that. It's more than four drinks on any day. Or 14 per week.
Uh-oh. That was telling.
All right. One of them already started, okay? It's Monday.
Yep.
This is my one for the week.
I know. I get it. All right. A quick break and then more show. Do you want to jump in? Are you calling from Wisconsin? Do you need help dialing? We're 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. All right. If you're just joining us, it's us. It's Bill and Wendy. The CDC just put out their annual report on the drunkest cities in America. Many, many, many of them take place just north of us in Wisconsin. We already told you Milwaukee's number 17. Janesville, Beloit is number 16. Racine is number 15. Sheboygan is number 12. Wausau is number 11. Eau Claire is number 9. The news gets even better, but first let's go to a call. Steve lives there in Milwaukee and knows a little something about this. Hey, Steve, how are you?
I'm good. I just wanted to comment. I grew up in Naperville, Illinois, and I moved to the south side of Chicago after college and then moved up to Milwaukee. To make a long story short, I met a girl up here and moved up to Milwaukee. And the culture up here is much different than where I grew up in Naperville, Illinois, to say the least.
How so? How is it different?
He used to go out to a bar in Naperville and you'd never see the same person twice. I mean, it was always a different conversation with a different person at a bar. And even on the south side, it was the same way. There's a lot of south side Irish there, as you probably know. And there's drinking in that culture, too. However, it was different people at a different bar or at different bars still every day. As where I moved up to Milwaukee 9 years ago, it's Gladys sit at the same bar still after work every day. And she's got her seat. You know, she might even have a plaque on her seat up here for Gladys. And it's just a totally different culture where, you know, it's more accepted. There was a lot more blue-collar in Milwaukee, in Cudahy, south side of Milwaukee. And it's just an accepted culture, and I used to think it's maybe a generational thing where the older people were more likely to do that. It's absolutely not. Just, it's, you go into a local tavern around here, it's the same people every day after work.
And it's a meeting place. It really is your cheers, you know?
It's a sociable thing more up here where you're talking to your neighbors, you're talking to people in your community here, whereas where I grew up in Naperville, it was more of a going out on a Friday night kind of thing. And again, it was never the same person twice. Up here, it's the same people in the same bar.
But Steve, the CDC is calling these the drunkest cities in America. When these regulars leave those drinking establishments, are they kind of drunk? Are you noticing them drunk?
Absolutely. There's they no are. Question about it. I mean, the legal definition of drunk, no question about it. And it's, you know, a DUI is significantly different up here than it is in Illinois, and I hate to say that, but it is. Illinois, when I was a kid growing up, you didn't drive drunk. You either got a friend to drive. There was no Uber back then. Up here, it's socially acceptable, and, you know, your first DUI is, I hate to say it, not a bad thing. Now, there's many people I know that have four or five up here, which is absolutely beyond conception for me, but it happens.
Yeah.
DUI's not a bad thing if you don't kill someone. I mean, because
it is a bad thing. I hate to say that. That's a horrible comment to make, but it is absolutely more acceptable up here. If you got one, it's, you know, everybody's got one kind of attitude. That's a terrible attitude to have, but it's the way it is up here.
So a different culture, a lot of blue-collar people. I mean, factory workers on the south side, you know, you'd go do your hours, you'd go have a drink after work, and you'd meet up with people, and that was your social time, you know, and then you'd go home for dinner.
Yep, and that's absolutely the way it is up here in Milwaukee. The social interaction after work, place to go, and then you'll help your wife and your family.
I might move to Milwaukee.
Are you
that sounds
head out
like
there?
I like
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
I like it.
Well, Steve, thank you. We appreciate
it. Thank you, Steve.
You're welcome.
All right, since the CDC put out your chart here, yeah. I thought I'd go to the CDC, and they have a little wheel to help us. Excessive drinking includes...
You shouldn't be behind the wheel, then. Stay in front of the wheel, not behind the wheel.
Excessive drinking includes... Now, this is the CDC.gov. Heavy drinking... For women, heavy drinking is 8 drinks or more per week, so they're one higher than...
Just above one a day.
For men, heavy drinking is 15 drinks or more per week. Depends what you have going on.
Yeah. Wait, what does that mean, depends on what you have going on?
Well, I mean, if you have, like, in the summertime, if you have graduation parties or picnics, you might be drinking more than 15 per week.
I'm just guessing, but I think with a lot of these numbers, they're not figuring in graduation parties. It's just people who their culture is on a nightly basis.
Heavy drinking
drink
is
a lot.
15 drinks or more for men per week.
Yeah.
8 drinks or more for women per week. Binge drinking, for women, binge drinking is 4 or more drinks consumed on one occasion. Count me in. I'm not being funny about it, but yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes, yeah. For men, binge drinking is 5 or more drinks consumed on one occasion. One occasion is 2 to 3 hours.
That seems about right, doesn't it?
I'm glad they have this little CDC wheel because it says underage drinking, any alcohol use by those under age 21.
Yeah.
So thanks for pointing that out.
Yeah.
And the last little part of the wheel, it says pregnant drinking. Bill, if you could just read that for me so the CDC can...
Any alcohol used by pregnant women is considered excessive drinking?
No, it's considered pregnant drinking.
Oh, pregnant drinking, yeah.
I mean, really? You have to have a little chart for that?
Is that like day drinking?
It's
That's
worse.
That's not on here.
It's worse. Let me just quickly round out the rest of the cities. Ames, Iowa is number 8. Back to Wisconsin. Fond du Lac, number 7. Are you shocked? I'm not that shocked. La Crosse, Wisconsin, and Onalaska, Minnesota, which are like the twin cities up there, those are number 6. Then Fargo, North Dakota is number 5. Back to Wisconsin for Madison, number 4. Green Bay, Wisconsin, number 3.
Ah, yeah, the Packers.
Oshkosh, Wisconsin, number 2.
Wearing overalls while drinking.
Appleton, Wisconsin.
And you know how you're number in a 1. Different part of the world? They're going to use that in their tourism brochures.
Right. We're proud to announce we're number 3, but we're trying hard to get up to number 1.
And
we're
LaCroix,
doing our best.
They should be drinking the LaCroix water.
Yeah, they've got the club soda factory right there. What's wrong with you guys? Now, if you were a Wisconsinite, wouldn't these numbers just startle you? I mean, I know you're used to it because you live there, but if I saw a list like this and I went, wow, it's Wisconsin, 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 I would go,
high five me,
yeah,
hater. That's what I'd say. High five me. We made the news again.
Yes, they did. Wow. All right.
Do we have the top?
Yeah, the number one was Appleton, Wisconsin.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I didn't know
that was number one. Where 26.8% of the adults in the town drink to excess. More than one in four have what they consider to be alcohol problems. And, I mean, every one of these is high, but that's just obscenely high. That's so high.
It could be worse. Could be two in four.
It could be two in four. That's very true. All right, we'll take a quick break. Steve has the news and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Steve, thanks. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy. Steve's bopping his head.
Hey.
Look at you watching Steve. Look at Steve's bopping his head.
That's what I like about Steve.
He keeps me warm at night.
What?
Not every night.
Not every night, but some nights.
There when have you're been really some cold,
cold nights, right? Yeah. Right. Do you remember the Chewbacca mom? This was a woman that...
Giggler?
Yeah. Her name's Candace Payne. She's the one... Now, let me see if I'm getting this right. She went to a department store in Texas.
Well, Kohl's.
Was it Kohl's?
Yes.
And then she bought a mask for her kids of Chewbacca from Star Wars. And then she went into the car and she videotaped herself, because that's what you do when you do anything now, is you videotape yourself and you put it on the internet. And all it was her laughing maniacally at her Chewbacca mask.
But it wasn't a put-on. She was really...
She was very happy.
She was cracking herself up.
She was very happy.
Very contagious.
Do you know how many times that video has now been seen? Now, keep in mind, this was posted on May the 19th, so we're about 3 weeks out. How many times has that video of this woman putting on a mask and laughing been viewed?
And how jealous are you?
I'm not jealous at all. I'm not even a little bit jealous.
10 million.
150 million times in 3 weeks. 150 million.
What does this prove to the kids of today? That all you have to do is put a stupid-ass thing on YouTube and you're going to be a celebrity and you're going to be rich.
Well, that's the best part of this is, in addition to being viewed 150, again, million with an N, 150 million times... She has received over $420,000 worth of gifts. And then also, and I don't know how this works, but people have explained this to me, but I don't understand it. You also get paid, evidently, from YouTube.
Oh, yeah.
Once it hits...
A certain mark.
Right.
You get
some
money
sort of residual
that, yeah.
For all the hits.
Yeah, I don't know the exact amount on that.
I don't know how they break that down. But somehow...
But that's not a lot.
She's... Oh, no, I think it is a lot, because I'm trying to remember what... There was some viral video a year or two ago, and then they asked the guy how much he made, and I don't even think that guy... I'm trying to remember what his thing was, but it was something like this. You know, it was just
you
some...
You are missing the boat.
...ridiculous video, and he got 100... He didn't get 150 million, this woman did, but he got several million hits, and he did real well for himself.
Advertisers only pay when someone clicks an ad or watches for 30 seconds. This is why you can't tie your channel views to dollars. If your video gets 10 million views but nobody watches or clicks the ads, you don't make any money.
Who watches the ads on purpose? You're kind of force-fed the ads, right? Sometimes on YouTube... You have to watch a whole ad, or sometimes...
You can skip them.
You can watch 5 or 10 seconds. And I don't know how that's decided either, do you?
And a dollar per 25 views?
Of the ads.
Yeah.
Right? That's not a lot.
But
would you ever, if you were on YouTube, would you ever go, well, there's some ads. While I'm here, I might as well see what the ads are. You wouldn't do that, would you? It's a waste of time.
Well, then you're not making a lot of money. How many views does it take to make money on YouTube? This is a common question asked, and it really depends on who you ask. This is from videopower.org, Video Power Marketing. You may have heard that you'll make $1 per 1,000 views, or that it's $1,000 per million views. Some say it's whatever. We should be asking, how much engagement does it take to make money on YouTube? You don't make money based on the amount of views you have.
You don't. They have to click the ads.
You make money based on people's engagement with the ad. Engagement here means clicking or watching an ad for more than 30 seconds.
All right. But sometimes you're forced to do that. If you click on a YouTube video, you don't have any say in it. If you want to see it, you have to wait until the ad is over.
Right.
So that's not fair.
Yeah, but then the woman's making more money.
Oh, I guess. But I don't know how they determine. I have no idea what their formula is for determining when you have to watch a whole ad, when you have to watch 5 seconds of an ad, or when you just decide, I don't want to see any ads. Because you have those options sometimes.
If it says skip ad, I mean, I'm sorry. I think everybody, unless like... you see something and it's like, oh, wow, that looks cool. Let me watch it. But I would bet the majority of people skip the ads.
So, you know, there's a real movement now from websites putting up little messages. I'm sorry if you just said this, about please turn off your ad blocker.
Oh, really?
Right, because they're saying, look, you know, we
this
have
is how
to,
we pay.
Yeah, and, you know, be fair here. Please turn off your ad blocker so that the ads pop up and we can all move forward because someone's got to pay for this content that you're reading.
Yeah, that, I guess that makes sense.
So she can't, I mean, she got a million, 100 million views.
150 million.
Okay, but if people aren't clicking on the ads, that doesn't necessarily mean she made a ton from YouTube.
Right.
These are more gifts people giving her. What did she get?
She got from Kohl's. That's the company that she was kind of shilling for. That's where she went and got the Chewbacca mask. They gave her, and this I think this one's common knowledge, they gave her roughly $3,000 in toys and Star Wars memorabilia and things like that.
Yeah, but what if she, like, I just spent $287 at Kohl's.
Yeah.
This weekend, and none of it was Star Wars paraphernalia. It was clothing.
Right.
They should have given her...
Well, they gave her a $2,500 gift card.
Oh, to get whatever she wants.
To get whatever she wanted.
In addition
they
to...
They got a bunch of Star Wars toys and masks and hats and things, T-shirts.
Jimmy Mack's going to leave me and marry her.
I know you think you're kidding, but he said to me...
Free stuff?
He was in the other day, and he had a picture of her in his wallet. I thought that was awkward. She got $7,500 in travel vouchers. You know, she did a bunch of talk shows. She was on Good Morning America. She was on The Late Late Show. She was on other shows. So in addition to flying her out, she got all kinds of travel vouchers. Hasbro gave her $2,500 in gift certificates for more Star Wars toys. She got a Walt Disney World vacation valued at $7,500. Walt Disney is the parent company now of Lucasfilm, so that was tied into Disney.
Now I'd marry her. We're going to Disney this weekend.
You'd get a nice trip out of it, $7,500. She gets to go to the Dallas Fan Expo for Star Wars and gets a VIP treatment there. That is valued roughly at $2,000. But here's the big one that I guess is... No, it is nice. It is nice. She received for her family, for her children, $400,000 in fully paid college scholarships to Southeastern University in Central Florida.
Is that where they're going to want to go?
It doesn't.
That's where they're going.
Yeah. It doesn't say that that's where they want to go. It said the strangest gift handed over to Miss Payne is a full college scholarship provided to her and her family from Southeastern University. They are a Christ-centered institution of higher learning located in Central Florida. Candace, here's their quote, Candace has inspired us and others with her joy. Were you inspired by her?
Yes. You know what? Can I tell you what is so exciting about this woman?
What?
Is it's just, in all this stuff going on, and there are a lot of rich people, she's just your average mom who goes to Kohl's, gets this mask.
Hey, I'm really excited to share with you something I got. Okay, I went to Kohl's today. I had to make a couple returns. Stuff didn't fit. Surprisingly, it was a little too big. Thank you. I know some of you may be thinking the opposite. Shame. No shame. It's all love. Okay,
she's just a real person.
Here's what I found when I was at Kohl's, and I'd like to say that I bought this for my son that would really, really want it. And let's be honest, he'll probably confiscate it from me. Confiscate? That's a word, right?
Real person.
So he'll probably take it from me. Right. However, this is mine. Like, when it's said and done, at the end of the day, this is mine that I bought. And I'm going to keep it for my own. You can see it kind of has Star Wars. Oh, you're getting a little hint. Okay. So you want to see what I got? It's so great. I can't wait to show you. Okay. This is part of my birthday joy, still rejoicing in my birthday. And so here's what I got. I'm going to take it out of the box, and I can't wait to show you. Okay, I'm in a parking lot, and people are literally looking at me like crazy. I don't even care. Okay, so here
Chewbacca
it is.
Chewbacca mask.
It may be a little tight. It may be tight on me. I got to undo it just a little bit. Hold on. Stay patient, people. Stay patient. This is going to be worth it. I promise.
Okay, we're going to pause because it's going to be worth it. She is so genuine, Bill.
I know she's genuine, but let's say you're a student and you're struggling like crazy to make ends meet and to get into a school, and you're trying your best to get good grades so that you can get a scholarship, and you do this for years and years and years, and you don't get a scholarship, but then you read that this woman got a scholarship because she put on a mask and laughed for a long time. Life doesn't balance out properly sometimes.
She didn't get a scholarship. No. That school got advertising. That's what they
did. Well, that's what's in it for them.
Sure. And right. Life is not fair, bottom line. I mean, you can't be jealous because of someone else's happiness.
I'm not jealous. I'm just thinking, if I was a kid trying my best to do everything to afford college and to get in based on the merits of education, and you go, or I could just put on a Chewbacca mask and cackle a lot, and then I get a free ride.
I don't know if anybody thinks that way. 312-981-7200. I would like to know, because I certainly...
You don't see it that way at all?
No, I'm just like, good for her. I want to hear
maybe
her
not,
cackle.
Maybe not, but... Okay, so this is what I got. Once again...
Come on.
Okay, here we go.
She's putting on the mask.
So... Yes! Now watch when my mouth actually moves. That's not me making that noise. It's the mask. Here, listen.
And your little dog, too.
She continues to laugh. To me, that's just awesome.
I'm thrilled that she finds so much joy in something that simple. I think that's great, but I'm telling you, if I was a kid and I'm like, oh man, I've been busting my butt every day working and working and working to try to get a college scholarship. And then you go, oh, wait a minute. This lady just put on a mask and laughed for a long time and she got a bunch of scholarships. You know what I mean?
You could do that with everybody. Oh, so-and-so has a better car than me. I don't ever think of it that way.
No.
I want to know if any kid's thinking of it. 312-981-7200. That's what I mean. You're jealous that she's getting the attention.
I'm not jealous at all.
Just say good for her. She's a goof. Move on.
I know. All right. 312-981-7200. Call us, text us, back after this. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
I'm just going to laugh like crazy.
Now the money's rolling in. The money's rolling in. We're talking about the lady... She was known affectionately as the Chewbacca Mom. This is the woman who about 3 weeks ago took a video of herself in the Kohl's parking lot in Prairie, Texas, Grand Prairie, Texas. She's had over 150 million views so far and received an incredible array of gifts, including college scholarships to a college in Florida, Southeastern University. It's a religious-based school, but they calculated... It's $12,000 per semester to go to that school right now. It's going to go up even more. If all four members of Payne's family attended and completed their degrees in 8 semesters, it would come to $96,000 per person, or $384,000 total. I just think, despite it being great publicity for the school, I think it's unfair to people who legitimately try their best to get a scholarship.
Yeah, but life is unfair. What are you going to do?
I know.
Kim, what do you think?
Hi, Kim. Well, exactly right. Life is unfair. Hi, exactly right. Life is unfair, but you can't help but have your heart broke. I have a daughter that I encourage all through school. If you work hard, you'll be rewarded. If you work hard, you'll be rewarded. And out of a class of 500, she graduated 25th in her class, and there was no scholarship.
So you get what I mean, right?
Yeah, but I mean, in life, you can work hard and you will get rewarded. But you know, we all work hard and don't get rewards all the time.
I don't disagree with you, but I regret using that as an incentive.
Do you see what I mean, though? I understand that life is a luck of the draw, that you're spinning a roulette wheel and the ball can come up on any number. But when kids see things like this, that instead of working hard and trying their best to get a scholarship that way, you could sit in the parking lot at Kohl's with a camera on you and get a scholarship that way. Or if you're a Kardashian, you can make a sex tape and be rich and famous based on that instead of going to school and getting an education and building yourself. It sends out a weird message, don't you think?
It does. I mean, the Kardashians,
absolutely.
I didn't realize that, you know. But, I mean, you got to make your own decisions in life. There's always been somebody who could find the easiest way to make a ton of money even before the internet.
Sure.
Now it's a whole different ballgame.
Right. Right, right, right.
Well, Kim, I'm sorry about your daughter. It sounds like she did work hard, and I hope something comes through with her hard work, because eventually it does pay off.
I hope so.
Well, good luck to you, Kim.
Thanks, Kim. We appreciate it.
And that's sad for Kim. I feel terrible, but it's not this woman's fault.
No, it's definitely not that woman's fault. It's definitely not. But that's like when I read this story, that's exactly Kim is the kind of person I'm thinking of, or her daughter too.
Hey, John.
Hey, guys. Needless to say, this conversation could easily move into a conversation about the whole scholarship environment and college expense altogether. But I hold a little will towards this woman. I have four kids, two of which I've already put through college, and two of which are in college right now. And they go to pretty expensive schools that they earn their way into. But at the end of the day, it's a combination of them going to work, me being able to pay what I can pay, and at the end of the day, they are going to make themselves better through this experience. And if anybody would hand me a money or a scholarship for making a video for 5 minutes, heck, I would take it in a heartbeat. So,
well, you better start thinking of some ideas, John.
I'll tell you, I came this close to setting up a GoFundMe page with just the whole hypocrisy of scholarships today, that if you come from a strong middle-class family where your family makes decent money and you work your butt off like the lady before to get good grades, and you're not rewarded with scholarships for people who are not as fortunate are, I thought scholarships were based on capacity and not need, right?
And merit. It's
not that way. And merit, exactly.
Yeah, I haven't started the scholarship search yet.
Oh, you're going to love it.
Yeah, but I mean, you know what? You don't always get a scholarship.
Right.
But did we lose you, John?
Well, I think I was just going to say that ultimately, if they have a desire to do whatever they want to do in life and they find a way to get it done, my wife and I both have been able to do what we've been able to do because of the hard work that we've done. But if someone gifts you something like that, you take it, you appreciate it, and you make the most of it.
Well, thank you for calling. Good luck with all the kids in college.
All right, thank you.
Thanks so much, John.
If she didn't get the scholarship, would you be so peeved at her?
No, I'm not mad at her.
Because it's not her fault.
No.
And is this a college anybody wants to go to?
I had never heard of the school until the story came out.
Has anyone called to complain yet that she's going to have to pay taxes for all of this stuff?
Oh, she is. She definitely is. Yeah.
So what happens if, you know, when I come up with this great idea and make my YouTube video and make millions, can I turn things down?
You'll be turning stuff down left
but,
and
I mean,
right.
But, I mean, can she, like, turn down that scholarship or turn down that thing?
Yeah, she doesn't have to go. Although, I'm sure you're already aware of this, because of the price of college, if somebody offers you a free ride, you have to take a serious look at it and go, well, I'm getting a free ride to your college.
But that's not, you know, maybe your college of choice.
Right. Oh, I'm sure. Right. But it does start to enter in. I mean, you weigh your options and you go, I can go there for free or pay $30,000, $40,000 a year there. Sometimes the free one looks a lot more attractive, you know?
You know, if it looks too good to be true, it usually
is. Sometimes it is. All right, we have to take a break. Thanks, everybody, for participating in that. A lot more show coming your way next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
It is Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder, and we are joined in studio by a guy who I just realized I've known for a very long time. I met you many years ago.
Many years ago.
It just came to Wendy now. Jim O'Hare is here, Chicago actor made extremely good. You know him from Parks and Recreation. He's in town shooting a movie. How do you know Jim, Wendy?
Back in the radio days, our paths crossed when I was just starting out in the radio business.
Yes. I was doing some crazy characters on The Loop. WLUP. So, you know, 100 years ago. And so just ran into you here and there and Buzz and
Buzz Kilman,
and Who was
Brandmeier in the morning?
Brandmeier. We did a bit with actually Brandmeier jumped in on a bit one night at some comedy club that we were doing. It was crazy. A lot of fun, but it was crazy.
Your background is radio. You did radio in Indiana for a while.
I did a show at a place called WRIN/WLQI because they had two stations.
Oh.
At any point, 5,000 people could be listening.
Boy, that's so, bad call letters to do at the top of the hour. Yeah, you had to do all of them.
Yeah. Well, you had to, and it was embarrassing because here's what I came up with, because I was young and stupid. So, good morning. You're on the air with Jim O'Hare and Rensselaer.
Oh, that's beautiful. Because
it was Rensselaer, Indiana.
Close.
That's very close to rhyming.
It's almost close to rhyming.
Wasn't Dr. Seuss the program director at the time?
Yes, he was. Yes. We would have contests, and our prizes were 6 packs of Pepsi. And I swear, my hand to God, these people would drive 20 miles to come in for that 6-pack of Pepsi. It was in Rensselaer, Indiana, so snowbeltish.
Yeah.
There could be 10 feet of snow. Didn't matter. All of a sudden, you'd hear a snowmobile pull up, and they'd come in, and they'd dust themselves off. Like, where's my Pepsi?
What, you didn't have a postage meter there?
No,
we're not sending
people anything.
Too expensive.
No. And my favorite moment was, I mean, it was such a small little town, and sweet. St. Joe College is there, and it's a very sweet little town. So I become like the morning kind of dude, and so you cast your check at the grocery store,
right?
And I made $120 a week.
Nice,
yeah. So a little
that's nice,
yeah. Things, yeah.
Did little, that money taint you, Jim? Do you think?
Oh,
it tainted me.
Did it? Yeah. You know who else hated that I made that? Visa, MasterCard, American Express, because they were on my butt after that, because I had to charge everything. No, but so my rent was $475 a month. So literally, I just made enough money to pay rent.
Oh.
So it was crazy.
Oh.
But so you'd cash your check at the grocery store, and one day I hand it to the girl, and she looks up and she goes, "Oh, I didn't think you'd look like that."
Oh, no.
I was like, really? Oh. Really?
That's
you got two
fair.
Front teeth missing, and you're telling me that you didn't think I'd look like that.
That's
so,
not fair.
That's why a lot of people get into radio.
Yeah,
though.
So for those out in radio world, just picture me. I'm gorgeous.
Stunning.
You are
gorgeous.
Stunning.
Radiant. That's the word I use. Jim, you and I used to audition against each other quite regularly for commercials and TV shows.
Yeah.
I'd see you at auditions all the time. Then I stopped seeing you. Then one day on Parks and Recreation, I turn on, and there you are.
Yeah.
And I say to my wife, good for him. You went above
did
the
commercials. Did you say good for him, or did you say
no,
that?
No, he was jealous as hell.
I was thrilled for you. I was thrilled for you.
Oh, well, thank you.
I was thrilled.
It didn't happen that easily, but it wasn't just like one day. But
I saw you on Party of Five as the plumber first.
I was butt crack plumber
once.
And you know what's crazy? Since then, maybe 2 summers ago, I did a film with Lacey Chabert.
Yes.
Who played, and my scene was only with her when she was a little girl. And she is now a full-grown beautiful,
very pretty girl.
In context, you just had a baby and got married, all that kind of stuff. So talk about life coming around. You're like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
And of course, she didn't remember our scene together. But at the time, I had, you know, was just starting doing guest spots. And so that is lodged in my brain, you know, every moment of being on the set and meeting the cast.
Yeah.
That was a great show.
Yeah. That
was
a great show.
I was probably too old to watch it, but I really enjoyed it.
I might have been too old too, but I did love it.
Yeah.
And the whole family dynamic and.
Yeah.
Neve Campbell, big resurgence, House of Cards.
I know.
Can't complain about that.
I have to say this about Parks and Recreation. I'm a TV fanatic from the time I was a baby till now.
Yeah.
I've never seen a show turn themselves around. I didn't think the first season of Parks and Recreation was good at all. I felt so bad.
Ouch. Because
I know how good.
Ouch, wow.
I know how good the cast
is. Wait,
is
this how this interview is going to go?
Yes.
Wait a minute.
An ambush.
Is this an ambush interview? Are you kidding
Bill
me?
Bill Leff is known
you.
For that.
Oh, my God. Are my exes here? What is going on?
Wait
here?
Till the second segment.
But after the first season, everybody figured it out, and it became one of the funniest shows I've ever seen.
First of all, I sadly agree with you. What happened is, you know, these pilots are crazy. You get cast, a group of people are together, you're shooting a show where you're supposed to have been friends for life.
Yeah.
Well, life is, you know, you get to know people. I'm sure you guys, the years have gone on, you figure each other out in that. So, but with the way it worked with Parks was, you know, the word was they got Amy Poehler. She's off of SNL. She's going to do a sitcom.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she was also pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
So they said, let's don't do a pilot. Just shoot as many as you can before it's too much, before she gets too big to be able to do it.
So what, she was holding clipboards
extra things. And that's what I do, too, for totally different reasons. Totally different reasons. So basically, we got to do 6 of them. So, and it's a shame because I do believe, because we were always ratings struggled. For seven seasons, we never had that feeling of, oh, no, we know we're coming back next year. We know we're coming back. Even though critically we were, you know, Time Magazine 1 year called us the best show on television.
Yeah.
Critically we were praised. But it was tough because those first six turned a lot of people off.
Yeah.
So here's what I tell people now when they're just getting into it. I said, start with season two. You won't miss anything. And when you're done, go back to season one. You will appreciate some of season one.
Really?
After having seen the rest of it. Because there is some great stuff in season one. Some great stuff. But because, and it's mostly Amy's character.
Yeah.
The voice hadn't been found yet.
Yeah.
It's kind of, you know, people were comparing her to Michael Scott from The Office.
Yeah, sure.
Where he was, which was so brilliant. But that's not who Leslie Knope was going to be. They didn't want her to be bumbling. And so they turned her into this amazing, I mean, crazy in many ways, but an amazing woman who was proud of herself and her people and loyal beyond loyal.
And I will make a confession that I never got into the Parks and Recreation.
Goodbye.
No, but listen, here is where life has changed for sitcoms.
Yeah.
I have teenage boys. They started watching it, so now I'm binge watching it.
Of course.
I was late to the party.
Yeah.
But I'm experiencing
Welcome.
It all.
Welcome.
So that's the great thing about Netflix and Hulu.
It's both of those. I really thought this would have died down. We've been off the air for a year. Well, no, boy, it was a year in March. So over a year we've been off the air.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, okay. So because we've all, you know, we get, you know, people come up for pictures. And if we're all together, it's like the Beatles craziness, which is sweet, but a little crazy. So I thought, well, that'll die down now that we're off the air. It's just the opposite.
Really?
Because of Netflix and Hulu, and now we're syndicated, so we're on, I think.
Congrats.
Yay. Well, you know, when you're a young actor, you say, oh, I just want to get that show that goes into syndication.
Right.
Because at least then, even if things are going crappy, there's still some money coming in.
Sure.
You don't have to cash your paychecks at a grocery store anymore.
Yeah, I'm not at the grocery store. So we got syndication, but I think it's Netflix and Hulu because it's craziness. Even the other day I was down here, it was craziness. But sweet, everyone's so sweet.
We saw you, Wendy and I watched. You were out in front of our studios a couple of weeks ago, and everybody did the same move. It's like, that guy looks like the guy that used to be on Parks and Recreation, but is it? I did that myself.
You did do it.
Yeah. There were people who will literally just stand near me to like figure it out, and I see my face on their phones. Like, so I know that
they're checking it.
I know that, like, well, I think so. Yeah, he might be a little fatter now. I don't know. I don't know what's going on there. But yeah, no, it's crazy. But the people are so sweet. I would never
You deserve it. Jim O'Hare is here. You know him from Parks and Recreation. He's in town shooting a movie. We'll talk about that and more. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Chicago actor Jim O'Hare is here. You know him and loved him from Parks and Recreation.
Hopefully.
Your character's name changed frequently, and I always thought that was a very funny inside joke. Please explain why your character's name changed regularly.
Here's how crazy that is. This is how crazy. The show was co-created by Mike Shore with Greg Daniels, who created the American version of The Office. So in the writer's room one day, when they realized who my character was going to be, the bumbling kind of put upon office joke, it got to the point where they had to literally stop pitching ideas because he said, we would just spend the whole day pitching terrible things to do to Jerry. So it became where they literally said, okay, we have to stop. There's other characters. But then one day he thought, how cool would it be if we keep changing his name? And the only reason they wanted to do it was so that it will become a Jeopardy question one day.
Oh, that's funny.
They wanted, you know, so like, what character on a TV, what series regular on a TV show had five different names? So that is what, this is what prompted. So then constantly, it began with Jerry, then it was Gary, then it was Larry, then it was Terry.
Yeah.
And then I even did, Chris Pratt did a Johnny Karate spinoff, his character, and I was Barry the Mailman. So yeah, five different names, and their goal was a Jeopardy question. So who knows?
Another one of the funniest aspects of the show was they didn't show your wife or your daughters for a while, and then when they finally did show your wife and daughters, it was Christie Brinkley.
Spoiler alert for people who are binging.
Yeah, spoiler alert.
Who always went out of her way to say how lucky she was to have snagged you.
Yeah. Well, the theory behind that, and it made perfect sense. You know, because they were mocking me so much on the show and giving me, terrible things happening to me. Mike said, we can't have you everything can't be terrible because this guy would blow his head off.
Yeah.
Like if he goes home and it's as bad as it is at work. So the theory was, let's give him the greatest life.
Yeah.
So at home, I had Christie Brinkley and three gorgeous daughters, beautiful. Actually, one of them is in a Tom Cruise movie right now. She's going to play his co-lead. But so I went home to this amazing life, and these women cherished Jerry.
Sure.
Like everything that came out of his mouth. And where at work, I might be fumbling. there's an episode where Amy Lesionope comes to the house, and she's about to drop something, and I quickly grab it and save the day.
Yeah.
So, they gave me the most amazing home life. I have amazing friends. We sing at Christmas parties. We're just like this amazing family.
Yeah.
So, but Amy actually had a funny bit, which thankfully they didn't go that way. She thought it might be funny if Jerry's, because when this was all being talked about, you know, being pitching ideas, she said, what if it was like this little nervousy little, this little woman who was just so scared, like, oh, the mean Jerry's coming home. You know, like, so at home, I was the tyrant.
Right.
Yeah.
But I'm glad we didn't go.
No, this is better.
Yeah, the other one's funnier.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, I like that angle, but this is funnier.
And more to do with it. You know, then you can bring the family in and, you know, that kind of stuff. So, yeah, it was, and Christie Brinkley is, Amy will always say, she walks in and the room lights up.
Sure.
It just does.
Yeah.
And she's smart and funny. And I loved it when I'd see the script and know that there was going to be family time.
And easy on the eyes. Let's
she
go ahead and
too
say
bad. You know what I'm
she's
saying?
All right looking.
That gal's got some games.
Yeah.
It's right. She does got some games.
Jim, everyone in the cast, it's one of the best ensembles I've ever seen put together, yourself included. Did you think, was there ever a time early on where you thought Chris Pratt will be one of the biggest box office stars in America?
No. And that's not to cut him down at all. I think Chris Pratt would answer no.
Yeah.
That being said, to work with Chris Pratt, you're going to find out two things. The man has the biggest heart of anyone you've ever met.
Good.
And the doctors are looking into it. But anyway, I digress. Good night, everybody. Two more shows next Monday. No, but he is the kindest. Sweet. He sent us, we're all still obsessed with each other. So we're constantly texting. We have this Parks Fam text thing. And he sent a pic the other day. He and his little boy, Jack, they made a dinosaur in the sand. And, you know, and Jack, I love when little kid, his son was born premature.
Yeah.
And he's doing amazing, but he has some eye stuff. So he's got the glasses. And there's something that is so adorable about little kids in glasses.
Yeah.
So it's just Pratt with his little son in his lap with his big dinosaur. I mean, he's just
like a sand castle, but a dinosaur.
Of a dinosaur.
Oh, cool.
Yes. I'll show you the picture.
Cool.
When we're off the air. Yeah. He's just this great guy. And I wouldn't have expected, but I'll tell you this. He has worked so hard for it.
Sure.
He tested against everybody in town for that Guardians of the Galaxy. I mean, everybody.
Yeah.
That was going to be the big franchise.
Yeah.
And he was turned down initially. I mean, this is his story to tell, and then he said, let me go at it again. And he fought for it. And he physically has gained weight and lost weight and gained weight and lost weight.
How about that?
Oh, when he would come back to Parks after doing a film, because we just ate. I mean, we had craft services from heaven. I mean, we ate all the time.
Yeah.
We would do a bit. Well, like say we were shooting at a restaurant, you know, and you're eating during the scene. So when lunch, they call lunch, you're like, ugh, I'll be in my trailer. I'm so full. Not Pratt. What do we got? What's cooking? And then we come back to keep shooting and he's right back at it again. So he is naturally, you know, his body wants to be fat.
Yeah.
But he's turned it into this rock. You know, just he's a machine.
Unreal.
So, yeah, no one would have expected it, but it's so well deserved. Like when we heard, I'll never forget, when Pratt, and I, when we heard the Pratt, when he told us he got Guardians, Nick Offerman and I had tears in my eyes because, you know, you meet a lot of actors, you meet a lot of different people.
Yeah.
And some people you judge, you're like, you don't deserve that or whatever. And people might say it about me. Who knows? But it was so no actor BS. It was just, is that the best, most deserved news.
And he rocked it.
And he rocked it. And his wife is Anna Faris,
right?
I had worked with years earlier on Friends. We both did an episode of Friends. And, of course, I was joking them, oh, Pratt, you're lucky I didn't make my move, buddy. You are so lucky. You're a lucky man.
But that led to Jurassic World, and that led to Magnificent Seven with Denzel Washington coming up.
Now so he's back in Atlanta. He's doing Guardians 2. Plus, he's the voice, the main voice in that Cars thing.
Yeah.
It's all franchises. It's like one franchise after the other. It's the best. Though I'm doing a sequel of a Lifetime movie.
Which one are you doing?
That's a franchise, right?
No, what is it?
Is that what you're shooting here?
No, this is
what are you shooting
different.
Here?
Here I'm doing a film called Landline. It's with me, and I play brothers with Tom Arnold. And Betsy Brandt is in it from, Breaking Bad.
Yeah, she's great.
She's awesome. Matt Aaron wrote it, is going to star in it. It's really a sweet film about kind of a guy who, technology is not working for him. He loses a job because he's not as good at it as other people and things go bad. So he's going to go back to life the old way.
Yeah.
I'm going to just, and you know what? You can't go back. It's tough to go back.
It's a great premise.
It's a great premise, and it's a really sweet script.
Good.
And we're shooting at Wrigley. I don't know if I should say when, but we're actually shooting in the park in the next couple of days.
Oh, that'll be fun.
So I'm super excited. And then I have another project in Chicago called Heavens to Betsy, a Robert Alanis film that I read the script, and it was like, oh, my gosh, is that a sweet, sweet, sweet script? So we're going to do that at some point. Then I'm doing, I'm going back to L.A. after this here and doing the sequel to The Wrong Woman with Danica McKellar that we did. It was turned out to be Lifetime. We were their number one Lifetime movie.
That's Winnie Cooper for people who
Winnie
know.
Cooper. And I'm working with all the youngins, you know, all the babies.
Lacey Chabert, Winnie
Cooper. Yes, yes. Well, I said to them, how can we do a sequel? My character was really mean and nasty. Like, I dumped her, like, as a client in this last one. And he goes, don't worry.
Find a way.
You're back and you're working with her.
Good, good.
Will you come see us again when these movies open and next time you're in town?
This is it, a one-time shot?
No, this will be it.
Not too soon. I mean, don't come back too soon.
Yeah, no. I would, you know, I'd take a mental picture of what's going on here because this will be it. And I do want to also say next, I will be heading to Seattle on Friday because the film I shot with Ned Crowley, a local boy who I started with, who you, if you saw him, you'd probably know him,
Bill.
I know
who that is, yeah.
We did a film called Middleman that Ned wrote and directed. And it is the closing film at the Seattle International Film Festival.
Awesome.
And we've sold out all the shows. We can't believe it. We're blown away by the reception
fantastic.
We've gotten.
Good.
So we're excited.
I'm so happy for you.
Thank you.
You deserve all this
Thank
and
you.
More.
You're awesome.
And if you do change your mind, the door's always open.
Yeah, probably not. But, you know, it's really been sweet. It's really been something.
Thank you, Jim.
Nice to see you.
It's Jim O'Hare, everybody.
Thank
A quick
you, guys.
Break and then the news. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Can I just say I love the feisty Eric Zorn?
Sure.
But there are days where he has gone missing. I love when the news reports
this.
Eric Zorn has gone missing.
Yes.
Or went missing. I love when Mary Schmeek fills in for him.
Eric Hard
Zorn,
not to
Eric
love.
Eric Zorn has gone putting.
Is that where he is?
Putting?
He's putting.
Everyone's golf. You mean in from golf, right?
Yes,
is he golfing?
Yes, I just texted him and I said, where are you, Eric? Why are they letting me on GN?
Mm-hmm.
He's golfing.
That's
we
where Steve Cochran was
with
today.
With the boys. Now, I hope I'm not divulging too much about
you're
Eric,
fine.
But he has a group of longtime male friends, and they go golfing on an expedition, I won't say where, once a year.
Do they bring their fiddles?
And they bond. No, I think the other guys would kill Eric if he brought his fiddle.
Yeah, it's disruptive to the world of golf. You can't fiddle in golf. Well, we're thrilled to have you, Mary. No doubt about that. And there's several topics we want to cover with. One of them is your thoughts about canned music. Please explain.
Well, I wrote a column a couple weeks ago, actually maybe just a week ago, about, you know, the newly rehabbed Navy Pier, which is really nice. I mean, what they've done down there is fantastic. It's turned from, you know, just a really schlocky kind of tourist trap to something that has a much more park-like feel. I mean, it's still very festive and fun, and tourists would love it. But more of us who live here, who have you know, always said, "Oh God, Navy Pier drives me crazy. I can't go there." Cheesy is the word, you know, that gets a
yeah.
So they've done all of this really nice stuff there, but the canned music is still there. So you're walking out along the beautiful lakefront. And you just, you know, hearing the gulls and the lapping of the water and feeling the breeze. And it's so beautiful. And then there's just the schlocky music coming at you.
Yeah.
I just don't get it.
What would be the better alternative? To have a quartet? A quiet would be better. Just everybody
keep quiet. A quartet would be nice.
A quartet would be nice. I mean, it's
non-speakerized. So as you get closer, you hear them.
Right. So, I mean, you know, my objection is that it is all of these speakers. Now, the good thing is.
Yeah.
In the old cheesy Navy Pier, as you walked along the beautiful lakefront and admired the breeze and the birds, it was competing music on competing bad speakers.
Oh, no.
I mean, that was really awful.
Yeah.
So it was just chaotic.
It's like Riot Fest.
Chaotic and confusing. So now what they have, and it was cool to learn about this. Do you know about Rockbot?
No.
No.
I'd never heard of Rockbot.
Mm-mm.
It's like a high-tech jukebox. It's what's the word I'm looking for? High-tech. Well, we'll let high-tech stand in for the word I'm looking for. So you put the Rockbot app on your phone. So say you go to Navy Pier and you have the Rockbot app. You, as a person who's visiting Navy Pier, can help decide what music they're playing.
How fun is that?
So it's like an old style jukebox, right? So you want to hear Michael Jackson doing Beat It.
Yeah, that was going to be the choice that Wendy and I threw out at you.
Me, Doobie Brothers.
Right.
I want to hear some Zeppelin.
Yeah, I'm not sure they're going to let you. Because another thing I learned about Rockbot. Okay, so anyway, people who are there can help program. But fortunately, they have the override power.
Oh.
The people who run Navy Pier. So
nothing too racist.
No swearing.
If people are putting things that just feel really wrong for the moment, for the mood, they can override.
How long before, let's say you request a song, how long before your requested song is put on the speakers?
I don't know, because I do not have the Rockbot app. I don't intend to have the Rockbot app.
It depends
how many
people are there.
And even though Rockbot's better than the old thing, I just don't know why we have to clutter up that waterfront beauty with music. Yeah. Let them do it inside the restaurants. Let them do it, let each vendor do whatever they want inside.
Yeah, but not outside. When you feel so strongly about something like this, and I know you do, do you go to management at Navy Pier and say, hey, I got a suggestion that I think will make this experience more pleasant,
or
do you let it go?
Because I write a column, I get to call them up, right?
Yeah.
I'm not sure that as just a visitor, I would have taken the extra step.
Yeah.
I did call them up.
What was their response?
Well, the woman I talked to was very pleasant and, seemed sympathetic. But, she pointed out, and this is true, that they're balancing many people's desires, the desires of the vendors, the desires of people who will freak out. These aren't her words, but so many people freak out if there's not canned music somewhere.
Really?
Well, why? She didn't say that. I'm saying that.
Yeah.
Because people are terrified of silence, even though it's not really silent.
Right.
There's
ambient noises everywhere that add to the experience.
Beautiful. Sure. Conversation, birds,
who
lapping
needs
water.
It's a fast-paced world.
So they were polite to you. You expressed your opinion, and they said, well, we're balancing the people who love music and the people who don't love music.
But, boy, I heard from a lot of people who were on my side.
More on your side,
and there are other places along the lakefront that, you've got these vendors that are playing just cheesy music out of cheesy speakers.
Right.
And it gets harder and harder to go to our beautiful lakefront and feel the nature.
Right. Yeah.
And most people who are jogging or biking have their own earbuds plugged in anyway.
Right.
So the rest of the people want to hear the lake breezes, and I'm kind of with you now on this.
Oh, Wendy, you make me happy.
I'm sure you've experienced this. There's times where I've gone to the beach, and then the people next to me all of a sudden will decide that everyone on the beach wants to hear their playlist.
Bad boombox?
Yeah. Right. And then for the next 90 minutes or 2 hours, you're treated to whatever the music that they like.
Right.
That's hardly fair.
Too, but.
Yeah. But what can you, in a situation like that, you can, your hands are tied. Right?
Come on, you wouldn't like to hear this. Seagull's already in the music.
Yeah, the Rascals are fine. Play the Rascals.
Reuben on Sunday afternoon.
Boy, when I was 12 years old.
Bringing Mary Schmeek back.
My favorite song.
But
the Young Rascals.
I don't think this is the Young Rascals, though, right? It is?
Couldn't get away too soon.
Sounds a little different to me.
See, now if this was playing, I think she'd like Rockbot.
Is that true? Yeah. All right, we'll take a quick break. Mary Schmeek is joining us. If you want to jump in, we're at 312-981-7200. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. We're talking with Mary Schmeek, fine, fine columnist for your Chicago Tribune. Mary, you also recently wrote about something that I think some people are aware of, but not everybody. We all know about New Year's resolutions, but you talk about summer resolutions. What's the difference between the two, other than the obvious, the season?
I'm a big believer in summer resolutions, especially up here in the northern latitudes, because if you do not actively resolve to do some summery things, you look up all of a sudden, and it's the middle of September.
Right. Yeah.
And you think, oh, my God, I never went swimming. I never got on my bike. I kept meaning to pump the tires up, but somehow that didn't happen. I spent my twilights watching Netflix instead of sitting outside.
Right.
You know, it's like, right. It's a little lecture I give myself every year, or I've learned to give myself, and I still don't meet all of my resolutions, but I like to make them.
And it does happen. There were a couple of summers where I realized it was over and I hadn't gone to a pool or a beach or anything.
Right.
And that's never happened again.
Never gotten in water. I mean, I think it was maybe a summer like that when I realized, okay, this is not right. The whole summer, and I never got in water.
My toes were never in, you know, hanging off a dock or walking in the sand or on a diving board. And really, since that year, I think it was 2 or 3 years ago, I made a point to, we belong to this little beach club. I'm like, we got to go. We have to plan something and do it, because if you say, oh, we'll do it next weekend, yeah, as you said, it's September.
Isn't it funny how the months of June, July, and August fly by at such a rapid breakneck speed? There's other months that we have here because they're cold and you're stuck inside. They just drag on and on and on. But these 90 days, June, July, and August, just fly by every year.
Yep. Yeah. I always think that summer is this combination of the months that fly by and yet time also slowing down.
Yeah.
And it's trying to figure out how you can appreciate this sense of slowed time while the months are passing by, and it does not happen indoors. That's the key.
Yep. Right. Right.
That sense of life slowing down does not happen in front of Netflix.
Do you feel this way? My wife and I eat out in restaurants almost all the time, and for some reason food in restaurants are always better outdoors. I don't know what it is, but there's a couple of restaurants we go to where the food is average at best, but they have outdoor dining, so we're in.
Most of the time. Yeah. You know, I like most of the outdoor patios in Chicago. Yeah. There are a few that are just right on the road. And if you're averse to noxious fumes and noise.
Oh, who doesn't like a little diesel with their Cobb salad? Especially when a bus goes by.
Yeah.
But like, you know, right here at Tribune Tower where we have Howell and Hood.
Yeah.
I can't remember it. But that is the perfect patio. We can almost see it from the studio where it's recessed from the street. They've got nice umbrellas so you don't have to bake in the sun.
The WGN Walk of Fame is right out there. Yeah. You can walk by there.
Right. Yep.
And you know, when you're saying things slow down in the summer, part of the reason is if you have kids, no school. So your schedule is not a schedule. You can do what you want. And it takes a lot of the pressure off of parents of getting the kids up in the morning and out the door. That, to me, is how things slow down. There aren't as many commitments. Maybe you don't make it to the grocery store, but you don't have to worry about it because you're not packing lunches. That's what I love about summer.
So let me ask you, Wendy.
Uh-oh.
Resolve something. Resolve something that actually takes a resolution for you.
Well, I garden. I do that. I make a point to do that and cut the grass. I love to do that. Mm-hmm. I like to be outside. I have no resolution. Eat better. Eat healthier foods.
You always do feel that in summer eat you lighter. Get healthy, right?
Yeah, right. Right, right, right.
I mean, you feel that in New Year's too, but it's tricky.
Yeah, but you're going to pull the shorts out now, so that's when you want to eat lighter and make fruitier drinks. That's my goal. That's my mission.
Bill?
Fruitier drinks.
You know what mine is? There's a bike trail fairly close to where we live, and for some reason last year we didn't do it at all, but the Green Bay Trail is this incredible bike trail that goes way, 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 way north, and on other years we've gone all the way up to Lake Forest from Evanston. It's a great drive back and forth. Last year we didn't do it. This year we have to do it because it's so much fun to just
go
out.
You've just sworn it in front
we're
of
gonna do it.
A large audience is going to hold you to it.
Do you have a bicycle pump?
I don't even have a bicycle.
All right, well, this is going to be difficult.
I just pantomime that I have a bicycle. People get out of my way, Mary. You'd be amazed. Yeah, I do have a bicycle pump. Yeah. But that's so much fun. It's weird because you think about bike riding, you go, is that really fun? Yeah, if you're doing it and, you know, we stop off and have lunch somewhere along the way and then come back, it's great.
You know, one thing I've done this year, this is my major resolve, is I renewed my Divi subscription.
Oh,
I had
did?
It the
yeah.
first year and I found I just didn't use it very much because it still had growing pains. And,
yeah.
And I didn't have it for a year. So this year I'm on what I call my walkie plan. Meaning a combination of walking and Divi every day.
Yeah.
And I am loving it.
Really?
So I'll walk out to the lake, and then I'll get a Divi bike, and then I'll bike along the lake for, you know, half an hour.
It's beautiful, isn't it?
Park it, walk a little more.
Yeah.
bike back or come to work or
yeah. What's all wrong right. with that? That's that, great.
Her resolution's way better than mine.
Wendy has resolution envy.
It's not a competition. Not a competition.
It's not. And then when you do this, you don't only feel the accomplishment of doing what you said you would do, but how could you not, you know, riding a bike along the lake or
well,
walking
along? Well, that's the
perfect.
Thing. I mean, it's for me. I mean, people are different. But for yeah. me, it's all about how do I get outside? How do I feel nature? Yeah. How do I move? But without that kind of grim, I'm going to the gym and I'm going to exercise feeling, you know, just
right.
the salubrious nature yep. of
yep. That's why I garden. That's
for the salubrious nature of it
yes.
all?
Yep. A lot yep. of bending, you know, I'm out there all day. Yes, I have a few cocktails while gardening, but can't do it in the winter.
Wendy actually
drunk on gardening.
That's now there's your book title. Wendy Snyder's
Drunk
on Gardening.
Yeah.
Coming yes. soon. Beautiful. Mary, always fun to see you. Always great to talk to you. Thanks for being here.
Good to
really
see
appreciate
you.
It.
Happy
it's Mary
beginning
Schmink.
Of summer.
Absolutely. Read Mary in the Chicago Tribune. We'll take a quick break. We'll find out what Steve Bertrand has next to Spill and Wendy on WGN. You know, it's ironic, Wendy, that Kim mentioned Spotty Showers because, as you know, that was my name when I was a clown over at Ringling Brothers for many years. Spotty Showers. I was the clown with
an umbrella on top of my head,
right?
Well, I thought you were the one who had like a bathtub around you and then a shower curtain. And
I tried
you
that
would walk.
For a while. Yeah, I enjoyed doing that for a long time, but then changed my name to Spotty Showers and became very famous in the clown circuit. Very, very famous.
How come you're not still doing it?
Oh, it's tiring. You wouldn't believe how tiring it is. Makeup on, makeup off. It takes forever.
Oh, don't tell me about makeup on, makeup off.
It takes
yeah,
so
really.
Long. Oh, I know. I apologize. I'm not here to hurt feelings. Welcome to our second show of the day. It's me, Bill Leff. It's her, Wendy Snyder. You can participate at any point in the show at 312-981-7200. You can call us or text us, whatever's easiest for you.
I have a story that I would like to share with you because I'm thinking this guy should get Dad of the Year.
Who is he?
He is a guy from Jacksonville, Florida,
mm-hmm.
and he is selling the SUV that he bought for his son. Do you know why he's selling this?
It's old?
No.
Why?
Because he learned that his teenager was using it, in his words,
yeah.
to drive around and smoke dope with his friends.
I like marijuana, you like marijuana, we like marijuana too.
The dad doesn't like marijuana. The dad says, his name is Alan Geiger, and this is his quote, got the last little bit of roach that I guess him and his buddies were smoking. Whoever gets this thing has definitely got to clean it out. So you know what he did? He said he put the 1998 Ford Explorer up for sale on Craigslist.
Huh.
He said, you know, if my kid's just going to drive around and smoke weed in it,
yeah.
I don't want him to have it. Within 24 hours, he got 60 messages.
From whom?
People who wanted to buy the yeah. car.
Because of its history or
no,
despite its history?
No, just because it was a car for sale, a 98 Ford Explorer.
Yeah.
He said he would prefer to sell it to someone in his hometown so his son can see it on the streets and know that he blew it by driving while high.
Yeah, that's right.
Father
He's doing
of the
right
year.
Thing. He's doing the right thing. Will there be an air freshener, a hanging air freshener included in the sale? Because my guess is the aroma in that car is going to be a little bit on the strong side.
It doesn't stick around like cigarette smoke.
No?
It really
it
doesn't?
No.
The dad, Geiger, Alan Geiger, says that if his son sees the light, not the lighter,
right.
but sees the light right. and saves $1,000 toward a new truck, the dad said he'll match the money.
Oh.
But at this point,
oh.
he's given him a chance to get out of it, but
yeah,
I don't know if that's going to work.
good for him.
I think
Teach
that's
that
a
kid
harsh
a lesson.
Reaction.
Yeah? All right.
A little bit.
All right. I also have a nominee for Father of the Year, if I can throw him in mine. Here's a guy.
You cannot nominate yourself.
No, I'm not going to nominate myself. There's a guy in Pakistan who is currently the father of 35 children, but he has explained that he's not going to stop anytime soon because he has a goal. He wants to father 100 children.
Does he provide for these children? Or does he just plant a seed and move along?
I think it doesn't really go into detail on exactly how responsible or irresponsible he is. His name is Sardir John Muhammad Khajli. He's 46 years old. He says he believes it is his religious duty to have as many children as possible. He insists that it is very rare that he mixes up his children's names. Now, keep in mind, at this point, he has 35.
He's lying. I have two and I mix
don't
them up.
Don't you, from time to time, even with two, you'll just say the wrong name, just instinct. You don't even think about it. You'll just, oh, I was off by one.
I sometimes call the dog a kid or Mr. Uji Guji at the gym.
Sure.
It happens. He's a liar.
He's a liar. His three current wives support his procreational and matrimonial goals.
Says he.
Right. They may be singing a slightly different tune. Adding that they all live in harmony together.
Is that the name of the town?
No. No. Though he would not allow the people who wrote the story to speak with those three wives.
Yeah, I wonder why.
I wonder why, too. Rights activists warn that it is women and children who suffer the most in polygamous marriages. I know, Wendy, you've said many times you'd like to be married to several guys at one time, but they're saying it doesn't always work out the way you'd hope. Pakistani men are permitted to take up to four wives under Islam, though to do so they must seek permission from their first wife. I wonder how that would go if I asked Terry if I could have more than one wife.
Hey, honey, let me ask you something. Hypothetically.
Right. Right. I wonder how quickly that would be voted down in Congress. It remains rare for men to take multiple wives in the country, but when polygamy does take place, studies have shown that it can result in depression and despair.
Well, duh.
I think it would, too, don't you?
You don't even want somebody to have three girlfriends.
No.
You want, you know, to feel some exclusivity.
Right, right. While children often struggle to know their father. This according to a man named Rafia Zakaria. He's a woman's rights activist. The Quran, she told AFP, dictates that multiple wives may be taken only when a husband can do perfect justice among them. That's the argument I would make with my wife. I want to make perfect justice.
Let me know how that goes.
Wasn't that a Steven Seagal movie? Wasn't that every Steven Seagal movie?
Justice for all.
I don't remember. No, that was Al Pacino. While perfect justice is impossible, and for this reason, polygamy is never a good situation, says the person who studied this, someone always suffers, and almost always it is the women and the children. See, I'm more concerned about this guy wanting to father 100 kids.
Well,
I feel bad he's got three wives because you can't equally give them the attention that they crave. But 100 kids don't stand a chance, do they?
No, and he wants to make the babies, not take care of them.
Right.
Yeah, it's fun to.
He just wants the fun part.
Yeah.
You got to be more responsible.
Exactly.
It says we lawyers. This is according to a family lawyer, Muhammad Bilal Qasi. We lawyers are well aware of social problems involving polygamy. Women and children undergo mental agony due to these affairs. The tension can lead to serious legal disputes over property and rights over after the father's death. Now, this guy is already in his 40s, right? He's 46.
He's still young.
He's still young, but realistically, how many children would he have to father to hit 100 before he's done? I mean, do the math. I guess with
Randall was
Tony Randall had a child Wednesday.
See,
he's been dead for 11 years. He's still fathering children.
Men can father children obviously longer than women can mother them or give birth to them.
Without a doubt. God, how can you even think about having a like? There's times you have the same amount of kids as me as two, where you go, I can't imagine having a third kid. Like two is, like,
I know,
because then you're out. Like the minute you have three, you're outnumbered. That minute, you're the odds are against you. There's three of them and two of you,
and that's not going to work. And I know there are a lot of families that have it, and you know, even when we had the second one, it's like, how are we going to do this?
Right.
And they kind of find their little spot. So you didn't go through it because you had them at the same time,
right? Well, a minute apart. So we had a lot. We thought about it a lot that minute. Boy, we're so used to one. What's it going to be like when the second one shows up in 44 more seconds?
I guess you did have a little adjustment time.
Right. And we always tell Reese, like Reese always goes, what was that minute like? And we go, we took Kylie to Disneyland. We had a great time at Disneyland.
You know, you're not even kidding either. Poor Reese. The nicest one of them all.
I know. She is. So good luck to you, sir, on your 100 children, Sardar Jan Muhammad Kali. 100's too many.
Do they have baby showers?
No, imagine you get a, like in the mail, you go, oh no, Sardar Jan Muhammad Kali is having another baby shower. We were just at one on Saturday. We got to go to another one.
was that show on TV that had a couple wives?
Like, well, there's a few shows.
There was a pretty popular one.
There's Sister Wives. That's not
the
one.
Do you watch all of them?
No. I'm trying to think of the ones that when I see in the cable guide, I quickly call my cable provider and complain about. That's one of them. But then there was the one on HBO.
Big Love.
Big Love was
on
HBO.
That's what I was thinking about.
He had three wives at the beginning and five at the end, I think. Four or five.
Yeah, I don't, I know it's not my religious belief to be a polygamist or to participate in polygamy.
Yeah.
There's no me in polygamy. It should be polygamy.
Right. Right.
But I just never understood how that, and they all seemed on this show, I must have seen 30 seconds of it.
It was good. I saw several. It was
a
good show.
Who was the guy? There wasn't there like I know
Bill Paxton.
Yeah. And I'm a huge fan of his, so I thought, oh, okay, I'll watch it. How could you be cool with it? I'm going to sleep with her tonight.
Think about if it was reverse. Like, could a woman pull that off? Could she say to the guys, "Hey, there's going to be I'm the kind of girl who likes a lot of husbands, so just get used to that." I don't think a guy would stand for that.
No.
What guy would stand for that?
What girl would want that?
I don't know. I have no idea.
It's hard enough taking care of one.
I know.
I just don't understand. Of course, you had that psychologist or woman's right activist who was saying, you know, there's a lot of jealousy. No kidding.
There would have to be.
I don't like to share my lunch, let alone my husband.
All right. We'll take a quick break, and then we have more show. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
All right. It is Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. We were talking about this Pakistani man who, per his religion, wants to have 100 children.
He's got 35 now. He's 46 years old. But his goal, he says, is to have 100.
All right. Well, someone pointed out that he's going to have to get more wives because the math doesn't work. If the man wants to have 100 children, he would have to get one more wife. That means the wives that he already has will have to have at least 14 more children each.
Right.
And the new wife will need to have 25 children starting now.
Yeah, if it takes 9 months, obviously. So that's, yeah, I'm doing the math in my head. Yeah, you'd have to have at least one more wife. It doesn't say here he would only father children with his wives, but I'm guessing, you know, he's an upstanding human being, Wendy. He's not just going door to door, if that's what you're thinking.
I wasn't thinking that.
His eldest child, it says here, is 15, and his youngest is just a few weeks old. At the beginning of March, he was still a father of 33.
Jeez.
But then that month, he had two more daughters born within 6 days of each other.
All right, well, he better get busy.
He'd be at Hallmark every day getting a card for somebody.
He's not getting them cards.
He should. That's what you do.
He doesn't have time. How did he have time to be interviewed?
I don't know. It doesn't say here.
708 says four girlfriends cool, four wives deadly. Yeah, I don't think so. Somebody else said, what guy wouldn't want to have to answer to more than one woman?
I'm sure it sounds like it would be a ball of laughs. But
to whom?
I don't think
honestly,
it would be.
Honestly, to whom?
Well, the average guy mentality is like, oh, no downtime. If one woman isn't interested, you would have another wife that
don't
is interested.
Don't you have a job? Don't you work?
I don't know that he does. I just think his job is to
my work is my life.
Procreate.
Wendy, watch Sister Wives. These women are so normal, I'd like to be friends with them. They're not a bunch of religious nuts. I'm not saying religious people have the polygamy thing going. I know Mormons are cool with that, right?
Not in all cases. And I don't remember what the breakdown
the
is.
Cool
but even
Mormons.
On, yeah, the cool ones are fine with it. Even on Big Love, they make the distinction that there's certain factions of the Mormon religion that are totally for it, and then there's others that are not for it at all.
Yeah, I think it's pretty limited.
Yeah.
The mainstream, no.
I just think it would be weird. It would be tough to share.
Yeah.
And then you have to share shoes with these women.
That's not the weird part, though.
That's where you go to second, are the shoes.
Right.
But,
right.
And all right, say you're at a family party and you're like, this is my husband.
Yeah.
This is his wife.
Yeah.
This is his other wife.
Yeah. And that woman over there, also his wife.
See,
and he's looking for another one. That was during Big Love. That was a large part of it is he had the three wives, but he was always looking to add another one or more. That's crazy.
That's, I just, I'm a prude, I guess.
Yeah,
I don't
you're
know.
Old fashioned.
I guess.
Just
hi, Tom.
One husband.
Hi. How's it going?
Good. How you doing?
Pretty good. The movie that was made where a wife had more than one husband was Paint Your Wagon.
Oh, with Clint Eastwood.
The only movie he sang in.
Yeah, it's a musical. Paint Your Wagon. It's terrible.
it's great.
You like it? Yeah.
I loved it.
All right, so there was a woman
in that
who had
movie.
A couple
she
husbands?
Had a few husbands, didn't she?
She had Lee Marvin and Clint Eastwood. She was sold by her previous husband so that he and his other wives could get out west with the money from that.
Right, right.
It's how been much a... would I go for if Jim tried
oh,
to sell
boy.
Me?
Oh boy,
a couple bucks.
$27.50.
$27.50. Awesome, Tom. You can go to Subway. Have a good one. Thank you for calling.
Never mind.
No, do it, Steve.
No,
what?
I'm not going to do it. I'm
no?
Nothing, no,
you're editing.
All right. I'm editing.
All right. Hey, Vince.
Hey, you're not taking into consideration twins and triplets. You bang out a set of triplets, boom, hat trick right there.
Jeez. Thank you, Vince. We appreciate your math
true
logic.
True hockey fan.
Yeah.
Doesn't refer to triplets as triplets, but a hat trick.
Is it puck drop or face off?
Oh, don't. Don't. It gets dangerous. It gets dangerous.
Hey, you know who we're talking to? An interesting gentleman after the news.
I don't know how much of this to divulge, but there is a man who's been in the news quite a bit, a byproduct of something that Donald Trump said on Friday, and he's really been kind of floating around the news because of it, and we have him on next. I don't know. Do we want to reveal more than that now or not?
Not now, but all just right. It's very interesting,
yeah.
And I can't wait to talk to him.
Yeah. I think you'll enjoy it. All right, Steve has the news, and then that, it's us, Bill and Wendy on WGN. That should be a new segment on the show where we don't just guess the temperatures, but we also guess the news. Like, Steve will just mention somebody's name, and we'll have to guess.
I've been playing that game for 30 years.
And plus, you never win the good prizes. Like, you said I could have won a stuffed animal.
Yeah.
Like the claw machine. That why do kids fall for that? The little crank or whatever it is with the claw that comes down,
yeah.
It doesn't close enough. It's like it doesn't clamp down on anything.
Right.
It's like, you know, the weight of a piece of paper would cause it to just
I know.
Not grab it.
I know. And yet kids are lined up at arcades
oh
from
God.
Coast to coast hoping to win a stuffed orangutan.
When's the last time you did the claw game?
Oh, it's been a long time because, I had a gambling problem for a while, and the
that's
first thing
not
you do
gambling.
As a gambler is you weigh your odds. So when you look in the claw tank, you go, what are the chances of me really winning anything based on what I'm seeing?
What are the chances you want anything that you're going
for? Yeah, there's
for?
Never anything good
you
in there.
You really want a Grateful Dead teddy bear?
Sometimes they'll put, in some of those claw tanks, they'll put like a gold watch or something. You've seen that,
real
right?
It's gold.
It's right. And you're not going to win it anyway. Spoiler alert.
Although I do see, we went to Dave and Buster's over spring break. I know. I
is that where your family went for spring break?
Well,
was
we're
Dave
going
and
to Disney this weekend, so we had them wait.
Oh.
And so it was funny to watch him line everything up. And so he won, a Chicago Blackhawks. It looks like a wedge of cheese.
Oh,
it's a pillow.
That's a great gift.
Very exciting.
Very fortunate.
We were stalling.
Yeah. Here's what happened. On Friday, Donald Trump spoke at a rally in Redding, California. And I don't know if you've seen this footage. I don't know if you've heard this before. But he said something that a lot of people are extremely critical about, ourselves included. We'll play the audio, and then we'll take it from there. Again, this is Donald Trump. He's in Redding, California at a rally. And he's explaining to his supporters, he's explaining to the audience what happened at another rally where there was a man who got into a scuffle with some people from the KKK. Now listen to this. This is not the entire tape, but this is the most important part of what happened on Friday. Listen in.
We had a case where we had an African-American guy who was a fan of mine. Great fan. Great guy. In fact, I want to find out what's going on with him. You know what I'm... Oh, look at my African-American over here. Look at him. Are you the greatest? Do you know what I'm talking about? Okay. So we have an African-American guy at one of the rallies a month
ago. All right, so he's talking about an African-American man, and he sees somebody in the crowd at this rally.
Right.
And says, my African-American.
Yeah. On the phone with us right now is the man who was just recently referred to as Donald Trump's African-American. It's Gregory Cheadle, who, by the way, is running for the House of Representatives in California's 1st District. Gregory, thank you for being here. How are you?
Oh, man, listen, I'm exhausted. I mean, flat out exhausted.
Is that from running your own campaign or because of all the press you're getting because of what Donald Trump said and pointed you out?
Listen, both. I mean, you won't believe what I'm going through. It's either a dream or a nightmare. I don't know which yet.
Somewhere in the middle.
I mean, well, the funny thing to me is that with all the serious things that are going on in the world, this gets that much attention, and sure. I'm just simply blown away with it. I'm, you know, just quite honest, I'm blown away with it.
Yeah. Well, Gregory, there are terrible things going on in this world, but this election, yeah. this upcoming election, could be very terrible for this country, in my opinion. And it just seems like this guy can say anything and poll success. Everybody still loves him.
Well, you know, what's interesting is that I want to see him for myself. You know, I've heard all these things about him, but I wanted to see him for myself. And that's why I went, because I need to see for myself. I'd like to think for myself. I'm sick and tired of people telling me how I should think and where I should go and what I should do. So I do it on my own.
Amen. And that's the way to do it. People should go experience the candidates and make their own decision on whom they want to vote for.
Yeah. And you know, in retrospect, I can see why people are upset. But I was not upset. And what tickles me is that people ought to be upset at the Supreme Court, you know, back in the day when they ruled that blacks were property.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
They ought to be upset at the fact that, you know, with the Democrats, and I'm not trying to pit Democrats against Republicans, don't get me wrong at all, but I'm just saying that the Democrats fought anti-lynching laws. They fought anti-slave laws. And unfortunately, the Democrats treat us as property to this very day. They think they own us. We can't get off of the Democrat plantation without uproar, without upheaval, you know. And so the question then is, who really is claiming that they own us? Is it Trump or is it the Democrats? So we have to look at this thing calmly and honestly and look at it from the perspective of, you know, what are we really doing? What are we really saying?
But Gregory, on Friday, when you're attending this rally and you hear mm-hmm. those words come out of Donald Trump's mouth, where's my African American? He's over there. That didn't offend you even a little bit. Maybe the wording of it didn't bother you at all.
Well, I mean, you know, what I like about your program is that you played that first part because he was talking about his African American friend.
Yeah.
And if you know me, you know, I'm a practical joker. I'm always doing something get a laugh.
Mm-hmm.
And so when he said his African-American friend, I forgot what the rest was. I said, I waved my placards and I said something. And that's when he pointed at me.
Mm-hmm.
And so that coupled with the fact that he said, what was it? Aren't you the greatest or something to that effect? I could not take offense of that.
But don't you think he threw that part in to kind of soothe you? Don't you think that's Donald Trump's way of saying, hey, there's my buddy, there's my friend? The average person would not have said my African American for all the reasons you just mentioned moments ago.
Well, I mean, and listen to this. I mean, again, I'm not really angry with people because of their response. I understand their response. There's a lot of hatred and animosity out there. You know, had he added the words friend, buddy, or whatever, like you said, that would be one thing. But now I would have been far more offended if he had said, you know, there's my African-American, yo, what's up, buddy?
Yeah.
Or the slang in.
Yeah.
Or boy, or, you know, dog. Those things would have offended me. But the way it was that day, I didn't take offense.
He, you know, in my opinion of Donald Trump, and if you vote for him, that's your own decision. Do it. Do your research. And if you think he's the best candidate, and I'm saying this to listeners, go ahead and vote for him. He just seems yeah. like a goof to me, a big doofus. So it's like, you know, when he says, but he does. It's like, I think he was just going, yeah, because this is what bothers me about him. When he will talk about sending the building the wall, you know. But I have Mexican friends. And it's like, you know, when you make fun of people who are gay, but I have a gay friend. It's like, you know, he's talking about black people, but I have this black friend of mine. Hey, there's my buddy right there. I think he was just being a goofus and he spotted you and that's what he said. And maybe we are overreacting, but when will it end?
You know what? I think that's the best word. We're overreacting. The problem that I'm seeing right now, you know, based on the social media and the text and the calls I'm getting, is that there is so much anger. You know, there's this willingness to misconstrue or possibly misconstrue a statement and make it fit so that we can be angry about it, so that we can unleash that anger that we have. And that really concerns me, because the anger that's manifested toward me, not toward Mr. Trump, but the anger that's manifested toward me is far more, it's infinitely far more damning and hate-filled than Mr. Trump's statement could have ever been construed to be racist.
And when I heard this, when we listened to it before we had you on the air, Bill, you saw it before I did, yeah. And I'm like, oh my God, what is he saying? But to hear your reaction to it, Gregory Cheadle, and saying that it doesn't really bother you, that kind of changes my opinion on this a little bit.
Well, and let me share this with you as well. And I'm glad your show is open, and, you know, not trying to be sensational about this, but we're having a good conversation, and I like it, so I just want to put that in there.
Thank you.
As the rally was ending and I was leaving, not a single person, and now bear in mind, that audience was 99.999% white. So when I left that rally, not a single person came up to me and said anything negative. It was not until the press got a hold of it and made a story out of it that people started approaching me and saying that they were offended by it.
Why were they saying negative things to you? That's what I don't understand.
Well, you know, the problem with being a black person, a black male in particular, is that there's this culture that forces us to be what they want us to be. We are. It's like being on a plantation. You cannot go outside these parameters. We tell you what to do. We tell you how to dress. We tell you what to think. We tell you who to vote for. And doggone it, you better do those things. Otherwise, you're an Uncle Tom, you're white, whatever. And that's the anger that I'm getting. I'm getting that from a lot of black folks who are just in that plantation mentality. They have not escaped the plantation. And so they are attacking me because it appears as though I have escaped.
Gregory, when he singled you out, the story that Donald Trump was telling the crowd at the time, and we didn't play all of it, but he was talking about another rally that he was at where there was an African-American man who he was involved in an altercation with some guys dressed as Klansmen. Maybe not dressed as Klansmen, they were Klansmen. So they got into a fight.
Right.
And the reason behind that story was to illustrate the fact that he has black support, that there is support from the black community for him. But as you just pointed out, 99.99% of the people at that rally were white people. What do you make of that?
Yeah. But here's something that you missed with your statement about the KKK that Trump put in there. Trump said that, and so it showed, the way he said it, it showed the stereotypical thinking about black men, because they were about to attack the black man thinking that he was a protester,
right,
when it was actually the white guy who was a protester.
Right, right. Because he, during the scuffle between the black man and the guys from the KKK, their hoods came off. So for some people watching that, they didn't realize these were KKK guys. They just saw a black man fighting two white men. It's crazy.
It is crazy. And so, you know, one of the things about running for Congress in this district, you know, my district is over 90% white.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're ever here, you always see me wearing a suit. And I do that purposely to help dissipate that horrible stereotype image that people have of us. And it's working bit by bit by bit. And so I'm just saying that we as black people, we have to, you know, take it up several notches so that we can no longer be held to those negative stereotypes.
That makes perfect sense.
It does, and you can't change history, but, you know, I'll tell you the truth. When I learned in school about slavery, and I have a 13-year-old who's learned about it in greater detail, it's shocking, and you feel sometimes being white, you go, God, I feel terrible for what, you know, my ancestors did. But you, mm-hmm. you can't change history, but don't, at some point, don't you need to move on and live your life?
Well, here's the problem with moving on, as you put it, and there's no disagreement there. The problem is we have institutionalized racism, and so that when you say move on, it's far easier for the victor to move on than the vanquished.
Absolutely. That's why I'm asking you this question.
And I'm not trying to start an argument. I'm just saying that from my perspective, when you look at institutional racism, when you look at institutional racism, it's endemic. And so we've got to get that out. I'll give an example of, you know, bias in testing, for instance. If you look at the California bar, which I have to take pretty soon, you will see that at test administration after test administration after test administration, the data is always the same. Whites are first, Asians are second, Hispanics are next, and then blacks are last. Every single administration. Why is that? They all went to the same schools and everything else, but we always have that data. And that's largely, I feel, toward bias in the exam itself because, you know, blacks are not brought to the table, as far as I know, to help construct these exams. And so when you say moving on to move on, that has got to include us because trust me when I say that, when I say this. We as blacks want to be included. We want to be important in society. We want to feel as though we are important in society. We want to be seen more than just engineers and sports figures. We want to be an integral contributing part of the society.
And maybe I'm naive to think you are.
Well, you know, it's difficult for blacks to achieve. It's more difficult for blacks to achieve in this society than whites because whites tend to be, and I hate to, I'm not going to say white privilege, I will say white advantage. And that's not to be negative, it's just a fact of life. If you go to any institution that's hiring, they usually hire friends. They don't hire based on your qualifications per se. It's, you know, who knows who, mm-hmm. and we tend to be out of the loop. And so, it's again, that makes it more difficult for us to get the jobs and to have the houses, so forth and so on.
We're talking with Gregory Cheadle. Gregory's been in the news quite a bit over the weekend. He was the one that Donald Trump referred to at a rally in California as my African American. Have you changed your mind at all, one way or the other, about Donald Trump since this incident?
Well, as far as voting for him or just him in general?
Him in general.
Both.
You have said you're not really supporting him, but yeah, let's go with both. You got to see him up close and personal.
Both. You know, when to hear him speak, he's the consummate entertainer, very entertaining, and to see the display of his wealth, you know, his jet. You know, those things are inspiring, and it makes me inspired to know that even given my background of growing up in the inner city during segregation and the race riots and all that stuff, it inspires me to go even higher. I mean, because if the reality is, for me to be running for Congress, it's something that my ancestors could have never, ever fathomed. So there's a responsibility that rests upon me. To make the best use of the things that have been given me. Now, with respect to voting for Mr. Trump, at the moment, I just feel like voting for him just to tick people off because they have really ticked me off. But that would be disingenuous.
Yes, because you started this whole thing saying that you didn't like the anger, and you mentioned other black people being mad at you for kind of saying it didn't bother you.
Yeah, and so it would be a disingenuous vote to vote for him just to get back at someone. You know, I'm looking at the Libertarian candidate. I'm not crazy about that person. I can't vote for Hillary because of her track record on racist mass incarceration of black people and what she's done to the world. What her and her husband, with her support, have done with respect to mass incarceration and the dismantling of welfare. So she does not get the vote at all. So that leaves Bernie, the Libertarian, and Trump. And so I have to examine this Libertarian more, because the last time I voted, I did vote Libertarian. So I have to look at this person more.
You're facing the same voting irregularities that we all are. Everybody's looking at the options going, uh-oh, what do we do now?
Which hopefully...
Go ahead, Greg.
Which hopefully makes everybody do their research and make the best vote they possibly can for the candidate that is best suited for their needs.
Sure.
Yeah. And see, here's another. Well, there's two points I want to make real quick. I don't know how much time we have, but.
Not much, but we're enjoying talking to you.
Well, I enjoy talking to you. I really do. You know, one point is get your behind out there and make a difference instead of being part of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing. The second thing is, what I'm going through is why people don't want to get in politics, because your life is just thrown upside down, inside out. But, you know, forget that. You have got to go on with your mission and become a contributing part of society and a meaningful part of society and be a positive role model.
Gregory, I hate to cut you short. We love talking to you. We have to break. But thank you for spending time with us. I know it's been an interesting couple of days for you, and you've reached the national spotlight. Everybody in the country knows about you now. And good luck with your run for Congress there in California's 1st District. And I owe it to everybody to ask you, are you any relation at all to Don Cheadle?
Well, for one, I think I'm far more popular than my dear cousin.
I knew it.
Good for you. Gregory, thank you. Good luck with everything, sir.
Hey, if you guys ever want me on again, I'd be glad to come on. I love you, the two of you. I mean, you treat me so well, and I love it.
Thank you.
You are a compliment to radio.
Thank you, sir. We appreciate it.
Thank you. And that's how we should all be. We should all have a conversation with one another and not get angry and not yell at each other, because you're never going to change anyone else's mind. Just converse.
That's it.
Agreed.
Well, best of luck, Gregory. Have a great week.
All right, you too. Thank you so much.
All right, take care. It's Gregory Cheadle, running for Congress there in the state of California. A quick break, and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
All right, you know, Bill, we are artists our own right.
Yes.
And we are intrigued by what we saw, an article on these little tiny pieces of art.
Two-by-two-inch canvases with incredible art on them. Jonathan Larson is the man responsible for them, and he joins us right now in the studio. Boy, are you good.
Thank you. Thanks
you
for having
really
me.
You really are. These paintings, the detail on these, and like I said, they're 2 inches in diameter? They're 2 inches high, they're two inches
square, yeah.
Square. I can't imagine the amount of detail. How do you do it?
Tiny brushes.
Is that what it is?
I love that answer. He's not being funny.
Yeah, no, that's reality. But yeah, just boiling it down to a smaller canvas size and then having the steadiest hand you can.
Yeah.
It's like painting any other painting, really.
But doesn't it make it harder? Why don't you go big-ass honking canvas and paint stuff? Do you do that too?
I've worked on bigger canvases. They take longer to do. So I'm a photorealist painter. By nature, that's always how I've painted. So working on a 2x3 foot canvas would take me 50 hours, whereas on a smaller size, I can get it done in a night or two.
Is your artwork mostly displayed in dollhouses?
It would be a fitting venue.
It would be beautiful.
If there are any dollhouse galleries that are around here.
All right, you can go to Jonathan's Etsy store, Cubiclism. I'm going to make it my favorite shop because I'm on Etsy.
Thank you.
And I just saw what looks very much like our house. It isn't, but now people can commission you to maybe do their house.
Yeah, absolutely. Part of the idea is that like you can take these paintings and bring them anywhere. So it seems like they'll have more sentimental value if people have chosen the image that are painted. So yeah, if you guys, if anyone has anything in mind that they want painted,
oh, that's excellent.
I do commission work. Yeah.
That's very, very good. And the frame, this is interesting. You create the frame by use of a 3D printer, right? Is that how you're doing
yeah,
the frames?
Yeah, I have a hobbyist 3D printer, and you can't buy the frames small enough to frame these 2x2 canvases, so I kind of had to make my own.
You learned that the hard way? You tried to find the frames and
yeah,
nobody had them?
It doesn't turn up much if you Google 2x2 frames, so...
Did you explain the name cubicalism? I'm having difficulty saying it, but Bill says it well. It's because a lot of people work in cubicles these days, correct?
Yeah, it's the idea of that you can frame this art anywhere. It doesn't have to be just above your mantelpiece or anything. It could be on your desk next to you. And then it was a pun on the art movement, cubism.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't resist the pun.
Puns are fun. They really are.
Yeah. So, but that was the general idea, is that this is art you can take anywhere or put anywhere. So
now, for a lot of people, when they decide that that's going to be their livelihood is art, you get mixed reaction from loved ones. What was everybody in your family and your friends' thoughts when you decided not just art, but really, really, really small art? How did they react to this?
They've seen me grow as an artist and start on the larger canvases and work my way down.
Yeah.
But art sort of runs in the family. So I've got, my dad was an art major, my aunt's a portrait artist.
So oh, wow.
The art side of things, they didn't really question. The scale was a bit surprising, I think.
But did you sell them on the amount of money you're saving on canvas and on paint?
Exactly. It's very effective from a material cost standpoint.
Oh, I would think so. Yeah.
All right. I'm just amazed at all the, what are the bean is blowing me away, I got to tell you.
Thank you. Yeah, that was the one that really, really caught fire, I guess, and got some attention.
Because it looks like a photograph. I know that's when a little painting is done well, but it looks like a photograph. It's 2x2. If you go to Jonathan Larson's Etsy shop, cubicalism.com or cubicalism on Etsy, it shows your paintings next to a quarter, which will show you
yeah, some
that
scale
they're really
necessary.
Right. But the bean, that thing is shining like the Dickens. It is. There's a guy in a boat. I can't believe how realistic and the shading on these tiny things. I'm serious. This blows me away.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
And we'll take pictures of them and put it at
oh, yeah.
Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder because I know we're on
it.
The radio.
Sure. You got to see it to believe it. One of the ones you brought in today is kind of a road, and there's a lot of trees and shrubs and bushes, and it reminds me, I know artists don't like to be compared to other artists, but your use of light is similar to Thomas Kincaid.
Wow, thank you.
You know, but you see
yeah.
it too,
Bill's
right?
Bill's whipping
you know I mean?
Out the, you know.
The art references?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. I know him and I know Whistler. So it's like Kincaid and Whistler, don't you think?
Thank you. I really appreciate
but,
that.
But just the way you because he was the painter of light, you have
right.
that same kind of quality with yours where light and dark are just so intermingled.
Yeah, and that's the goal. I think that's the subject matter that really catches my eye the most is
yeah.
the stuff where light it plays a strong role.
Did you ever see the dogs playing poker?
I have.
Like, that's my favorite painting of all time.
Wonder how that would boil down on a miniature canvas.
Very small dogs playing poker.
Very small cards.
Right.
That detail work would be pretty hard.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
What about, like, if somebody wanted to commission you to do, like, a little tiny black velvet Elvis? An Elvis Presley. Would you think about that?
I'd give it a shot.
Yeah.
I
can't promise it would work out, but I'd give it a shot.
Did you ever see the guy? There's some guy overseas, and I can't remember what country he's in, but he paints stuff that's like on the head of a pin. You've seen that
I'm
guy,
not
right?
the smallest painter out there by any means. I don't know how they do that.
So even you, a guy who can do this and do this well, even you're amazed at what
yeah,
that guy can do.
That's a whole different level. I have no idea how you go about doing that.
How do you even look at that? Do you have to put
you
it
need,
under a microscope or
need,
a magnifying glass?
You know how like...
jewelers?
Yeah, they have that thing that they stick in their eye. It looks like a monocle, but it's not.
Right.
You need one of those. And even then, you got to squint and go, I think that's nice.
Do you
I don't
have to pay
know.
Extra for the monocle?
Yeah, it's an extra $9.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's not worth
that's
it.
That's not fun.
That
no.
seems crazy. This is perfect. And, you know, maybe for a nursery, sometimes you don't have, like I have a great niece who just turned one. Mm-hmm. Maybe you would want to get something for a nursery room just for the little desk or little table in there.
Yeah.
They're so beautiful. I can't get over. We had talked to you off the air about Bob Ross, this artist
mm-hmm.
that Bill and I used to watch when we were growing up.
On PBS.
Because there was nothing on. We didn't
right.
have any channels to watch besides 8 of them.
Right.
So we watched him when he was out and about, and now on Netflix, they're streaming this Bob Ross. Have you watched him do this stuff?
I've watched a few. It just came on Netflix, so I haven't gotten to it yet. But
You'll
it sounds,
love it.
From what I've heard, it sounds like he works on much larger canvases.
Yeah, yeah.
But
have you done showings, Jonathan? Have there been art galleries that have had your work displayed yet?
In his cubicle.
Yet.
He has
yeah.
had a showing.
Is that where it is?
No, not yet. It'd be interesting. I wonder. I'd have to figure out how to display these in a gallery setting.
Right.
But that'd be awesome if it ever worked out.
I think that'd be great for you. What is something like this? I don't know if every price is the same, but is there an average cost for your work if somebody wants to buy it?
Yeah, at the moment I'm charging like $120 for a commission piece.
That's not bad.
Yeah, it's hopefully reasonable for a custom piece of art.
Will you take a very small check?
Yeah, the smaller the better.
You're killing yourself, aren't you?
Sometimes you see somebody will win a contest and they'll get a huge check. I make very small checks.
Perfect.
So I'll pay you with that.
Too bad Ed McMahon's not still around to give him the small check. That would be
that
beautiful.
That would have been great.
It's a great idea. It's an unusual idea because, you know, in this day and age, a lot of people have these giant rooms in their house, great rooms, and they want like a giant print on the wall.
Yeah.
But this is, you can put, you know what you should do? People should send their pictures of their pets, and then you can hang it right over your dog's water bowl or your cat's water bowl. Wouldn't that be cute?
Yep.
Oh, my God. I've just given you an idea.
That's perfect.
So if someone, how do they do it? Do they send you a picture? Do they contact you on your Etsy store, Cubiclism?
Yeah, my email on my website or through my Etsy store works. And then, just a photo, and then we'll talk details and how they want it to look and go from there.
And, Jonathan, we want to make sure we're all spelling this correctly. Cubiclism is Cubiclism, cubiclism.com.
Correct.
All right.
How long does it take you to do? I know it varies. Did you ask him this already? I'm sorry.
I did, but
I didn't hear the answer.
It takes about like 5 to 6 hours on average. It varies from painting to painting. But,
yeah. And is the process the same as if you were doing a regular size painting? Are you doing one color at a time? Are you doing one area at a time? Yep. How do you do it?
It works just the same. You lay down color and value, and it's like boiling down a larger painting onto a smaller canvas.
It
just takes a smaller brush and a steadier hand.
Oh, so. I bet. Enjoy this now before your eyesight fades when you're older.
I don't think I'll be able to do this for too long. So.
Oh, just wait. As soon as you hit, what is it, about 40, you have to start wearing the reading glasses?
Yeah.
Maybe 45?
I may need them sooner. So.
Yeah.
All right. Well, cool. Jonathan Larson, interaction designer by day, miniature painter by night, and they're tiny little 2x2 paintings with cute little frames made by your 3D printer. So what material is that on the frames?
It's a plastic filament. Called PLA.
It looks like wood, though. It seems like wood.
Yeah, it's got a little grain to it because the way that the 3D printer works, it lays down like a strip and then just lays that on top. So
it works. I mean, it all gels perfectly.
Yeah,
together.
It worked out well.
Great.
So
I swear to God, it's like we're grandma and grandpa who are sitting here going, "Can you believe they make frames out of
kids
printers
today with their little paintings?" Oh.
Well, such a pleasure to meet you. We'll put your collection. We'll take some pictures and put them up on our Facebook page, Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder. But good luck. And if you need to contact Jonathan Larson, you can Google him. You can go to cubiclism.com. You can also go to his Etsy store, which is Cubiclism. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Take a quick break and then a lot more show, Bill and Wendy WGN.
Kevin took some cute little pictures of the little tiny palm-sized paintings. They're smaller than palm size.
They're very, very...
That's relative, though, really,
on
the size of your palm.
Right.
I guess that's true. Jonathan Larson is this miniature painter. Go to Cubiclism. And his grandmother, Marilyn Roderman, listens to us all the time, listens to WGN like 24/7.
He was too shy to say hello to
hush,
her.
Hush, hush. I.
But we are not too shy. So, hello. Your grandkid did great. He paints small paintings.
You and your little small jokes, that was really good.
Thank you. You know, the other day I told you how upset I was about the breakup of Taylor Swift and her boyfriend. Very, very upset about this.
We were okay about it because we knew we were going to get a new song.
Right. Every time she breaks up with a guy, which is often, you get not just a song, sometimes a whole album about the breakup. Now I have more sad news from the world of people we shouldn't care about. Demi Lovato and Wilder Valderrama have also broken up, Wendy. This is very upsetting.
He is from that 70s show. He was Fez. What's her deal?
Well, she's Demi Lovato.
That doesn't mean a heck of a... I've heard her name.
She's
singer?
Just, yeah, she's very popular.
She's an actress? Has she been in any shows?
Nope. Just she does music videos along with her music, but she's not been in like Shakespeare plays or anything like that. But this, first of all, Wilder Valderrama has dated some of the most beautiful women in Hollywood, and I'm
jealous.
Yeah, kind of jealous.
He's good looking, Bill. I mean, not that you're not, but
Wilder is good looking.
Seriously,
Wilmer Valderrama.
You guys are all so unbelievably jealous.
You have the strangest taste in men.
I don't think.
Don't tell my husband that.
He's not great looking, is he, Steve?
Yes, he is. Nice.
Really? I don't put him in that list.
On that '70s show. They make him look dorky on that.
Is there a rule, or was there a rule on that '70s show that all the guys had to date women whose names were either Demi or Demi? Because there's only two women on the planet named that, and the cast of that '70s show has dated them. How does that keep happening?
It's just coincidental.
Okay, I'm looking at other pictures of him.
Do you think he's
looking?
Is he
much better than in the show? Yeah.
Were basing it on.
He's better looking than when he played Fez, but he's still. I mean, he's honestly. It's like a who's who of the most beautiful women in Hollywood, and he's dated all of them.
He's pretty good looking.
I think there's more to it. I don't know what it is, Wendy. Something's going on.
Okay.
With Wilmer Valderrama.
There's something going on with you if you don't think he's a good looking man.
He's okay looking.
He looks like Enrique Iglesias. Look at how good looking he is.
No.
How do you not find him attractive? How am I asking you that?
He's not what I look for in a guy. He's not what I look for. He's okay looking. But has he done well for himself.
But I think he's better. I think Demi Lovato was lucky to have him.
Do you think so?
Yeah.
I don't know. Now, they started dating. They say they've been dating for 6 years, and he is currently 36 and she's 23. So they said they started dating when she was 18. But I think it was closer to 17, which is weird because he was 31 at the time. Isn't that a little weird?
When does your gossip podcast run? Because seriously, it's like, I don't even care about these two people.
Rona Barrett and look, Bill Lev.
The Gossip Boy podcast has been WGN Plus's most popular podcast.
Yeah. Now who's jealous? Like, oh my God, do you know who Demi Lovato broke up with? Who cares?
Whispers to
people.
Right.
I like to keep people informed of who's together and who's separate. This is a gift I have from the heavens.
You better do a gossip podcast on WGN Plus.
Gossip Boy has been their number one podcast for 8 weeks standing.
Who's been eating at Phil Stefani's?
Who's canoodling? Who's birthdaying?
That's Sneed.
She stole
does
that
canoodle.
From me.
Or no, she does spooling pasta.
Spooling pasta, right. Which you know is a euphemism for something. Wink, wink.
Sewing?
Yep.
Come on. Who's the Harvey guy from TMZ?
Harvey Levin?
Yeah, do your own little gossip
Maybe
podcast.
Maybe I will.
I like Rona Barrett better.
They have the same haircut. Kevin is looking up Rona Barrett.
Kevin, I should
no
be offended.
Idea.
I
no,
should be
you
offended.
Shouldn't. She was very popular.
Rona Barrett was. I know she was.
I don't know why this came up.
Because I'm upset. I want these kids to be in love, Wendy, and they're not anymore, and it's very upsetting. He's so much older than her.
Who cares?
He's 13 years older than her. That's crazy. All right, we'll take a quick break. Don't forget, Gossip Boy, WGN Plus, number one, 8 week standing. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Steve, thanks very much. It's us. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder. And on the line with us is Chip Kidd, one of my favorite writers. Chip is appearing here in town at Printers Row Lit Fest this upcoming Saturday the 11th at the Harold Washington Library Center in the multipurpose room. He'll be there from 11 a.m. to 11:45 a.m. Chip, you couldn't do the whole hour? Come on, what's wrong?
No, I just do what they tell me.
I don't think you should duck out early, Chip. Give them the hour. That's what they're there to see.
I'm happy to give them the hour.
I have to tell you, I've never spoken to you before, and I was just telling Wendy, when you write a book, you write the definitive book. I have your Batman books about Batman collectibles and art, and boy, mm-hmm. they are just stunning to look at.
Well, thank you very much.
Absolutely.
I am a little bit more stunned with your artwork. The book jacket.
Oh, well, thank you.
I am not a collectible like Bill is, although I saw him admiring some of the figures you have.
Mm-hmm.
I think I didn't read the collectible books, but I do. You're known for your book jacket art, too.
Yes. I mean, I would say in general, I'm probably better known for that, but for the book jacket art. Yes,
you've done all right for yourself. Why did you get into this line of work, Chip? What was going on as a child that you decided I want to go into this type of work?
Well, I knew I wanted to do something creative, and I wasn't quite sure what. I mean, I'm also like a big ham, and I was thinking about like theater or music or something like that. But basically, I decided to go to Penn State University. I grew up in southeastern Pennsylvania, and I ended up majoring in graphic design there. There was something about that just clicked with me, or the other way around, or what have you. And then once I sort of like made that decision, I was very pragmatic about it. It's like, I'm going to study graphic design, and then I knew I wanted to go to New York.
Yeah.
Like as so many people do. And so from there, it was the fall of 1986, and I went to New York with my portfolio, and I sort of hit the pavement and did a ton of interviews, and it wasn't really completely what I had in mind, but the first substantial job I was offered was at Knopf Publishing to be assistant to the art director for the book covers. And I thought, let's give this a shot.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, well, it's worked out well.
It'll be 30 years this October.
Congratulations. That's great.
Same job.
Several of your projects have revolved around Batman. What do you think it is about Batman, about that particular character that we, not just in America, but throughout the world, just love this character so much? Why do you think that is?
I get this question a lot, and I sort of don't know how to answer it without just kind of blathering on and on and on and on. I think there's something about the character that resonates with the public at large, and I think it's this, obviously it's an escapist fantasy, and it's escapist fantasy that involves being extremely rich, for one thing. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a desire to make your own rules, do things the way you think they ought to be done, and not frankly be answerable to anybody else, really, except your own conscience. But then there's all the obvious aesthetic trappings of the costume and all the gadgets, and the villains are so great. Some people argue that the villains are more interesting than Batman is, but I don't necessarily agree with that. But then you have the storytellers, the people who are able to tell these great stories with this character that resonate with a lot of people.
Was Batman the one whose parents were killed right in front of him?
Yeah.
That's correct.
Yeah.
That's correct. Yes.
And then you also have the other kind of mysticism of him is that so much of the action takes place at night. It's almost a romantic background to his adventures, wouldn't you think?
Yes, and then there's also, I get too, psychological about it, but there's the duality, the double life, and, pretending to be a certain kind of person by day and then turn into the different creature at night. I think that's a very male thing,
yeah,
frankly. Yeah. So, I do think a lot of it has to do with how well the stories are told and how well they're depicted, whether it's in a comic book or a cartoon or obviously the movies. I think a lot of incredibly talented people have really nailed it in all of these various media. Mm-hmm. And unlike say the Lone Ranger, they just haven't been able to make that character relevant to a popular audience, and they keep trying and it doesn't work. Now, why? Again, that's like subject for a whole other show. But somehow, Batman continues to resonate.
Yep.
Chip Kidd on the line with us. He's going to be over at the Printer's Row Lit Fest at the Harold Washington Library Center. And you're there this Saturday, the 11th, from 11 a.m. to 11:45. Which Batman do you think is your favorite?
Oh, man. By default, I just go way back to the beginning to the first couple of stories by Bob Kane and Bill Finger in 1939.
Yeah.
And that's Detective 27 up through, 32 or 33. And that's getting very, very geeky. I think Bruce Timm's Batman the Animated Series is absolutely marvelous. Marvelous. And arguably, those are the best Batman films, I would say.
Yeah.
Overall. And of course, Frank Miller's Dark Knight and Alan Moore's the Killing Joke and of course Frank Miller and David Mazzucchelli's Batman Year One. That for a contemporary story, that's probably would be my favorite, the default one.
You can go to chipkidd.com. I'm also looking at the book jacket art on Batman: The Dark Knight Strikes Again, and what a cool looking eye of Batman. Were you really worried that people wouldn't recognize that as Batman?
I wasn't worried. DC Comics was worried. The funny thing with that cover was Frank asked me to redesign Dark Knight Returns, which is, as a fan, that was simultaneously totally exciting and completely intimidating. But that also meant designing the hardcover first edition for the sequel, The Strikes Again, and DC Comics basically said to him, okay, if you want Chip to do it, I hate to refer to myself in the third person, but if you want him to do it, then you have to let him do it and let him do his thing. And so I did, and reduced it to the eye for the Strikes Again. And he loved it. And DC didn't, because they're like, wait a minute, where did Batman go? We just have an eye here. And so then the whole thing flipped around and Frank had to argue to them that I did my thing and that they really needed to go with it. He really fought for it.
Chip, we want to talk to you also about one of your newer books about Charles Schulz, The Art of Peanuts. Can you hang on for a minute?
Sure.
Excellent. Chip Kidd is our guest. If you have any questions or comments, we're at 312-981-7200. Bill and Wendy, WGN. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN, along with Chip Kidd, a great writer, fantastic graphic designer, has written dozens of books, each of them fantastic. He's appearing at the Printer's Row Lit Fest this upcoming Saturday in the Harold Washington Library Center's multi-purpose room. Starts at 11, ends at 11:45. Go to chipkidd.com or printersrowlitfest.org. All the information is there. Chip, we were just playing the theme from Peanuts. You wrote this book, Only What's Necessary, Charles M. Schulz and the Art of Peanuts. Tell us something about Charles M. Schulz that we might not know.
Oh, man, that's a really good question. Wow. Well, his dog when he was a kid was actually named Spike, not Snoopy. And he didn't create a character called Spike till relatively late in the series of Peanuts.
Snoopy's brother, right?
Yeah, correct. Yeah. Correct.
Yeah.
Franklin, the African American character that was introduced in the late 60s, he was very hesitant to do that, and it was a suggestion from a fan, a self-proclaimed housewife from Santa Barbara, California, who thought that it would help. It would help the national zeitgeist in the wake of the murder of Martin Luther King.
Mm-hmm.
And he appreciated the suggestion, but he didn't really feel like he was up to it. And in the book, there's this correspondence that's never been published before between he and her. And she, over the course of several letters, convinces him to give it a shot. And I thought that was absolutely fascinating. That was one thing that I discovered when I was researching the book.
I don't think people realize when it comes to Charlie Brown and to Peanuts that they were kind of innovators in terms of little kids speaking like adults. I know now with The Simpsons, and you can go on
South
and on
Park.
South Park, every show that has kids now, they're saying things in an adult way. But it was really Peanuts and Charles M. Schulz that started that trend.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And he did it before Peanuts existed. He was doing a strip that was only appearing in a small newspaper in Minneapolis, St. Paul. And it was called Little Folks. And that's when he started experimenting with that concept. And the characters were even more simplified than they later became. But they they're these little kids, you know, talking about, you know, very adult things.
The psychiatry sign, for gosh sakes. When little kids, right. I that was the first time I had to ask my mom, what does psychiatry mean? And is 5 cents a good deal?
I remember I first read the word neurotic as a child. Lucy was listening to a recording of Georgie Porgy Puddin' Pie, Kiss the Girls That Made Him Cry, and the last panel, she says, well, boy, what a neurotic he must have been. And I either had to look it up or ask my parents or something. I mean, you know, that was way before Woody Allen.
And he was, Charles M. Schulz was a hockey fanatic. Didn't he actually have like an Olympic-sized rink built on his property at home?
Oh, yes. It exists. It very much exists in Santa Rosa, California, and you can go visit it. And across the street is the Charles Schulz Museum, which is fantastic.
Have you not been there, Bill?
I've never been there. I want to go. I got to go at some point.
You really should. It's first of all, it's beautifully designed.
Yeah.
And you just, you know, they rotate out the shows of all the original art, you know, with different themes like the seasons or when I was there researching the book, the theme was political activism, which he didn't fancy himself as doing much of that. But then the evidence was there, you know, and that's where I saw the letters about Franklin.
Wow. Wow. It's so funny to me that, you know, that Christmas special, the Charlie Brown Christmas special, is such a perennial classic, and everybody at the network was nervous about it, and they weren't happy with it when it was done, but it's really become such a big part of Christmas.
It's such a fantastic story to read about that special for so many reasons. I mean, first of all, they finally got the go-ahead from the network in August, and they had to deliver it in December.
Yeah,
which is just insane. Mm-hmm. But then Schulz and his producer, I think it was Lee Mendelson, you know, they made all these decisions that in retrospect make perfect sense, but that the network was freaking out about, but they used actual children, not actors, to do the voices. There's no laugh track. And the end is just the speech from the Bible with silence. And, you know, they were getting all this, Schulz was getting all this pushback on it. And he was very obstinate and said, you know, it's my way or the highway. And they, I think it was CBS. I think they threw up their hands and said, okay, fine. You know, we're just going to write this off. And
look,
you know,
what they created.
Look what happened. I mean, it's an amazing film.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
no doubt about it.
I remember showing my kids it for the first time, and I hadn't seen it in years, I'll be honest with you, until I had kids. And then hearing that silence was almost deafening to me after what you were used to. And then you realized how great it was.
Yep.
Yeah. What did your kids think?
They love it. They love Batman too. I gotta be honest with you, Chip. I was more impressed with all your art titles and all your novel, like Jurassic Park and Lost World. I'm not a big Batman fan. I appreciate him and think he's great, but I think your artwork speaks for itself as well.
Well, you're very kind. Thank you.
Go see Chip Kidd. He's appearing at the Printers Row Lit Fest this upcoming Saturday, the 11th, at the Harold Washington Library Center's multi-purpose room. Starts at 11, ends at 11:45
It's in the multi-purpose room.
Yeah, they can do whatever they want there. It's multi-purpose. ChipKidd.com is his website. PrintersRowLitFest.org is their website. Visit either or. Chip, great to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Good to talk to you, too. Thank you.
All right.
I hope to see a lot of people on Saturday.
I hope so. You deserve it. That's Chip Kidd, everybody.
Thank you.
We'll take a quick break. We'll find out what Roe and Anna have next. Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder with you on WGN.